Julio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on 720 WGN. Thursday night into Friday morning here. And, we'll, you know, at Friday morning, we'll have our regular Friday features, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday, all coming up. We are going to be talking about some of the worst hated companies in America. We're going to talk about some, if you've ever had difficulty with your cable company, everybody has. We'll talk about that as well. And some of the real names of 42 fictional characters. And Burger King is using moldy Whoppers to advertise. So, and also we do classic stand-up at 2:30 in the morning. Eddie Murphy's first appearance on The Tonight Show. You'll hear that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text anytime you want to jump in here. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Dr. Matthew Brown is a psychiatrist, and he specializes in whole health psychiatry and also the use of psychedelic therapy in psychiatry. And Dr. Brown is with us now. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nick. How's it going?
Good, man. Good, good, good. Tell everybody about yourself. Where are you from and all that good stuff?
Well, I live here in Chicago. I wear two hats. I work for a community mental health center called Trilogy Behavioral Health. It's up in Rogers Park. We help a lot of underneath folks in town. And then I also have a private practice, mostly in Evanston and also here as well.
Talk a little bit more about the Rogers Park Institute.
Sure. So Trilogy is it's been around for almost 50 years. It's an organization that works to try to help bring people from a place of struggling back into health and into the community. Do a lot of work with homeless populations, trying to move people out of nursing homes who get stuck there, trying to find them housing resources, connect them with behavioral health care as well as primary care.
Oh, that's great. That's really great. And it's been around for how long? You said 50 years?
I believe next year will be its 50th birthday.
Wow.
So we're getting there.
That's really great. That's really great. And when did you begin your interest in psychiatry? Was it something that you always found fascinating or something you got into later in your life?
You know, I kind of stumbled into it. I started off undergraduate as a computer science major.
Oh, is that right?
I took the first few classes, and I decided I hated that, actually, even though I coded all throughout high school. And I just started taking random classes, started taking psychology courses and film studies courses, loved them both, and that ended up being my major. Psychiatry specifically, I think, I was about to graduate and I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And I thought, well, I could either move to L.A. and see what would happen in the film industry, or I could go into counseling. But then I thought, nah, medicines are important. So did the pre-med thing and went to med school, and now here I am.
And there it is. Yeah. Oh, wait, now, so yeah. You did study film when you were in school.
Correct. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that, because I happen to be a film critic here on the on the station. So tell me a little bit about your interest in film. Was it from when you were a kid or?
Yeah, you know, I just always liked watching movies growing up. I became a big Kevin Smith fan like in early high school.
Oh man!
And that got me into you know, trying to think about auteurs and cinema and like being able to do things on a small budget. I don't know. Watched movies and having a major where you get to just kind of hang out and watch a movie and write a paper is not too bad.
No, it's not. It's not at all. We'll get into the. I want to get into the whole psychiatry, and we'll also talk about psychedelic therapy and all that stuff. Do you have a favorite movie?
Favorite movie.
I know that's a tough question. I know.
Yeah, it changes all the time, really.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if. This sounds horrible, but I mean, like the reflex. Knee-jerk right now is like if I just want to put on a movie in the background that I've seen a million times, of course, just like The Big Lebowski.
Oh, there you go.
But I don't know if I would say overall. There's so many different good movies out there. It's hard to nail it down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Big Lebowski is a great one, and I'm sure you're excited about the Jesus roles.
Yes, right. Although kind of a spiritual successor.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah. Okay, Dr. Matthew Brown. Is with us. We are going to talk about psychedelic therapy and psychiatry and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. Thursday night into Friday morning, and all the Friday features will be coming up. We're also going to be talking about dealing with your cable company, the most hated companies in America, and the real names of 42 fictional characters. We'll play some classic stand-up, Eddie Murphy's first appearance on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. The Johnny Carson Show, you can see the reruns, which are spectacular. You can see them on Antenna TV. Right now, Dr. Matthew Brown is with us, who does child, adolescent, and adult psychiatry. Matthew, so tell me a little bit about how you deal with, you do child, adolescent, and adult psychiatry. How do you juggle that, you know, dealing with different ages of folks?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that would be perhaps a challenge, but really, one thing that I think that I learned a lot in my child fellowship was that truly, adults are really just big children, to be honest. So I feel like I approach most people fairly similarly. The vocabulary that you might use tends to differ depending on age, but really, people are people, and we all relate in a very similar way. So it's fairly straightforward, I feel.
Okay. So in terms of psychiatry, you deal in whole health psychiatry. Tell me what that means.
Sure. So, when most people think of psychiatric care, they think about prescribing medications, which is part of what I do. But really, I try to focus on the things that are good for physical health that are also good for mental well-being. So like sleep, diet, exercise, mindful spiritual practice, cultivating positive relationships with other people. Those are the things that really promote healing. And so I try to really urge my my clients to work on those things. And that allows us to minimize the burden of prescription agents.
So, you talk about those aspects of people's lives. What is there a common thing that's lacking in people's lives, their daily lives, that you notice as you treat people?
I mean, it depends on person to person, but any more really that social interaction relationship part tends to be a little bit of a struggle because as we're more and more connected online, I think we end up being less and less connected with each other. Sure. And having direct conversations one-on-one. There's is something more fulfilling about that rather than reading words on screen.
Yeah, but so there must be there has to be an increase in that kind of a problem over the years because I mean, you know, I've talked about this before on the show where I've been in a restaurant and there are four people at a table next to us and nobody is talking, they're all looking at their phones. And that seems to be an issue everywhere.
Right. Yeah, and this is a very modern problem. And I think it just kind of popped up over the last handful of years and we're all trying to figure out what to do with it, but you know, we humans were very adaptable, and some people are dealing well, some people are not dealing as well, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, how do you deal with that? What advice do you give to people to try and get them to stop connecting to just their phone and not connecting with other people?
Well, I mean, really, it starts with taking breaks and allowing yourself to reconnect with yourself. So allowing yourself to spend time just alone, trying to maybe get in that meditative state. But if that's even difficult, just like giving yourself just a few moments of just silence and just like noticing what's going on in your body or even allowing yourself to just get bored for a moment because like we're so distracted all the time. Our brain's pinging from one thing to another. It's like just bringing back to like to focus. That's number one.
Yeah.
But then other than that, like actually talk to people like, most times, again, I'm working with kids or parents, and dinner time. That's a ritual that I think a lot of households still do. But like, actually sit down and have a meal together and talk. That can be extremely, extremely helpful for the well-being of everybody in the family.
I like the fact that you said allow yourself to get bored. I like.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty great. Allow yourself to get bored. I've never really thought about that before.
Yeah, we really do. I mean, think about how long it's been. I mean, like, I remember all the time thinking back to college when there was nothing to do. I mean, I have, like, a bunch of research articles that I'm reading, and there's not – I don't have this device here to distract me, to suck me down some rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But now it's just ever-present everywhere you go. So,
The old cliche of psychiatry, I guess it still exists, where it's just, like – there's somebody lying on a couch, and the guy's sitting in the chair taking notes, or the woman is sitting in the chair taking notes. Does that still persist?
I mean, I think that the therapy office where there's a couch and a chair tends to work fairly well. It's a more comfortable environment. It's less clinical than sometimes even well. Actually, for instance, we're going back to Trilogy. I mean, most of our clinics we have just like more clinical chairs, and it's fine. It works just great.
Yeah.
But I don't know, when people just feel more relaxed, they want to talk a little bit more. So yeah, like in my own practice, I have a couch where clients typically sit, and I have a chair and I sit there.
Yeah.
So it's more comfortable that way.
Yeah. So is it easy to, when you have a new client, let's say you have a new client, I know because going to a therapist or a psychiatrist, some people feel intimidated and they're scared or they don't know what to do. How do you break through to that? How do you get it to a comfort level when you can actually speak to someone?
You know, I just, I ask them the very basic question of what can I do for you? And I listen. And if you listen enough, people tend to open up.
Yeah. All right. Well, that works. Now, let's talk a little bit about the psychedelic drugs aspect of psychiatry.
Sure.
There's a taboo on that. It seems to be that there's a taboo about using psychedelic drugs in the field of psychiatry. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, I mean, within the field of psychiatry itself, I don't feel like I've run into too much of a taboo on that subject, believe it or not.
Mm.
I presented at the American Psychiatric Association on the subject twice over the last, basically 4 different years. And all of our talks were very, very well attended. I think that psychiatrists are fairly comfortable with this idea because it's, you know, we're used to giving people medications all the time that sure. change their mental state.
Right.
And all of us, we realize that the tools that we have had in our toolkit, you know, they work very well for the most part, but they're still kind of lacking. And there's now become a lot more compelling evidence to support the use of psychedelics in mental health care, and due to the promising results that it's had in research. And so people are paying attention because we just want to get people better.
Mm-hmm. When did your interest start for using psychedelic drugs in your field?
Sure, yeah. So that was in my my adult residency. I trained at the University of Missouri in Kansas City. As part of the training, we had to staff the psychiatric emergency room during the nights for 4 months during our second year. So we were on, like, opposite schedules. And so I didn't get a lot of social contact. So I started reading a lot of books, and I started discovering podcasts. And I was listening to a podcast one day, and they were talking about ayahuasca on there. Mm. And I thought that, you know, this is very bizarre. I'm like over 30 years old. I've never heard of this plant medicine that they use in Peru to help people, you know, get better and heal that way. Maybe I should look into this. About a little bit later on that week, I walked into one of my attending psychiatrist's offices, and I made a comment about a painting that he had on the wall. I said, "Oh, you like that painting? That painting's of an ayahuasca vision. Have you ever heard of ayahuasca?" I thought, this is too bizarre.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then so he started telling me about how, you know, originally he was from Peru and how, you know, this is a traditional healing method they've used to treat mental illness down there. And one of his dreams in life is to merge our traditional Western medical techniques with the traditional healing there. And I don't know, I just went down the rabbit hole
yeah.
from there.
Wow, that's great. We are here with... Dr. Matthew Brown, who is a psychiatrist and is now experimenting, well, not experimenting, but using psychedelics in therapy. And when you were studying psychiatry, was this, I mean, you mentioned a little bit at school, was this part of it? I mean, did that break into the psychedelic use of drugs in psychiatry? Was that something that was studied?
I certainly started studying the literature.
Yeah.
I mean, I realized that there, this was not necessarily a new thing, that we have actually decades and decades of a very promising science, that got halted like in the early 1970s, unfortunately with the initiation of the war on drugs by the Nixon administration.
Right.
It's a shame because, we might not have as much of a mental health crisis as we do now. But at least some of these things are being reinvigorated, and we think that we might be having some, like I said, better tools to treat some of the conditions that we've been struggling to cope with.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Matthew Brown is with us, and he is a child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist, and we're talking about psychiatry and the use of psychedelic drugs in helping people with some issues. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Giulio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's a Thursday late night and into Friday morning, so all the Friday features will be coming up. We're also going to be talking about the real names of some fictional characters. And do you have issues with your cable company? and the most hated companies in America. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Dr. Matthew Brown is with us. Doctor, you know, we were talking about the psychedelic drugs that are now being used in psychiatry, but what kind of drugs are currently getting the most research into the effect on patients right now?
So the two most under investigation right now would be MDMA, more commonly known as like Molly or ecstasy, although that would not necessarily be the pure form of MDMA for post-traumatic stress disorder. That's one. And then psilocybin for a number of different conditions. Psilocybin is the active ingredient of so-called like magic mushrooms. That's been shown to be helpful in smoking cessation, treatment-resistant depression. Both of those agents are now in what's called phase three clinical trials, which is the final phase before being able to be prescribed by practitioners.
Mm-hmm. Now, because of the stigma that's put upon drugs like psilocybin and things like that, is it difficult to try and convince people that this should be used in practice?
I mean, I think it depends on who you're talking to. You know, in most of the psychiatric community, I think has been fairly favorable about this because the beauty about the psychedelic medications, it's not really just about the medication. The medication is more of the catalyst to therapy and to change. So if you look at any of the protocols that they're using, there's probably a good about like maybe 10 hours of psychotherapy that also goes into on top of the drug session that one might do. So it's really the medication is facilitating the change and allowing the brain to sort of reconnect in different ways much faster than it would otherwise.
Do you try to avoid prescribing drugs of any kind, not just the more progressive drugs that we're talking about? And try to keep it without drugs, just therapy itself?
Well, you know, for me, I think everything is a tool, and I use anything that works. So I do utilize psychotherapy. I utilize all the behavioral techniques we talked about before. I use supplements, and I also use prescription medications. Mm-hmm. I do try to minimize the amount of prescription medications that I use just because everything that I use has risks and benefits. And it seems that most of the prescriptions do have more risks than some of the other agents that one might use. So you'd want to minimize that as much as possible.
Right. So when you're treating a patient, you know, with psychedelic drugs, tell me about the process and what the patient experience is. Or I know it differs between patient and patient and person to person, but tell me a little bit about what that experience is like.
Sure. Yeah. The rough protocol that they've been using in a lot of the research trials during a psychedelic session would look a lot like having a couch in the room, but then having sheets on the couch and the patient lying down on the couch, having a blanket over them, laying down, putting an eye mask on, covering their eyes, and probably putting headphones on, listening to some calming music. The therapist would sit next to them on a chair or on a pillow on the floor and just allow them to have the experience that they're having. If anything difficult comes up, generally they're encouraged to just go with it and just kind of walk through it. And that's like the very, very, very short version of what psychedelic therapy looks like as far as a practical standpoint.
How long has psychedelic therapy been around? Is it relatively new or how has it been years or?
Well, I mean, it depends on through what lens you're considering psychedelic therapy. One might argue that psychedelic medicine is probably some of the oldest medicine that we know of as
sure.
humans.
Yeah.
I mean, we have evidence that humans have been using psychedelics to about like 10,000 BC, something like that. So I would say this would be the oldest form of medicine probably that we know of.
Mm. Okay, we have a text here from a listener in the 815 area code. Could you expand? Are hallucinations used to expose the issues at hand in patients?
So the visions that get brought up during psychedelic experience tend to come from you know, unconscious things that we're kind of holding on to ourselves. And that unconscious whatever is being brought into our consciousness. And so to a certain extent, yeah, but it was already there. We're just now being more aware of it. And so that's the whole beauty. And the thought of, like, bringing up these things that we've been holding on to that we haven't been dealing with, now we're dealing with it and we can let it go and move on.
Can they serve patients better with mainstream drugs, or do you prefer psychedelic or whatever it takes? You know, like if you're prescribing.
I am a big believer in whatever it takes. I mean,
right.
I do not think that anything is a panacea. I don't believe that any of the psychedelic agents are going to be good for everybody. I still think that it's very important that we have some of the even maybe less popular antipsychotic medications, because that is some of the only medicines that some of the people who are really, really sick, struggling with disorders like schizophrenia, they can't tolerate anything else, and that allows them to function in the community. So, yes, I support that. But at the same time, I much more support trying to, you know, get 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, eat well, get some physical activity, spend some time with yourself, and spend some time with other people. That's the best medicine.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Do you talk to people who actually work the shift that I work? Because I'm on every night from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m., and my sleep schedule is very erratic, and the weekends are always weird for me. that really is kind of a burden, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. I'd say sleep is probably about a third of the battle for most people. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah. So do you ever talk to people who work the third shift and give them advice?
All the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's tricky. I mean, you just ideally you just try to flip your days and flip your nights and try to live like that as long as possible. But it's hard because you have expectations from family and friends to do stuff during the day, and you know, you're not a vampire.
Yeah, no, it is. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, doctor. I've been working this shift. I've been a night owl pretty much my whole life. I've been a night owl. You know, I worked at Jewel grocery store many years ago, and I worked for a long period of time between I did the night crew from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. and my sleep schedule has been kind of screwy since then, and that was like 30 years ago or so. And now I've been doing this radio show on the overnights for a while. It's difficult to try and dig in there and get like a normal amount of sleep. It is a difficult thing.
Yeah, I can understand.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the next steps for psychedelics in psychiatry. I mean, we talked about the psilocybin and more. What do you see as the future of that?
I mean, I think that as it gets out of the research labs and us to be able to prescribe it, that more and more people will be getting relief. I think that we're already seeing some of this as, you know, ketamine is an agent that is currently prescribable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is, it's broadly in the class of psychedelic medications, although the way that it works is a little bit different, and a lot of the chemicals involved are somewhat different, but the end result tends to be similar. You know, people are having favorable results with that.
Yeah.
So I think that we're just going to have new tools at our disposal to be able to use. I think that over time, if indeed these agents in combination with psychotherapy are as promising as they seem to be, we're going to be prescribing medications less and less. I think that, you know, the mental health treatment in large is going to change dramatically. And we're going to get a lot back to, like I said, more psychotherapy rather than, you know, take a pill and all your problems go away, because that was never the case.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about ketamine here on the show many times, and there are people who use it and it affects them really well. The effects are really, mm-hmm. really good for that. So, all right.
Sure.
Dr. Matthew Brown is with us, and we're talking about psychiatry and psychedelics and psychiatry and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here on 720 WGN. It's the Nick DeGiglio Show, and we continue. Mm-hmm. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. 4 a.m., we go over to Bradley Place on the TV side of WGN, Channel 9, and hear that early morning news, and then at 5 o'clock for your morning drive on this Friday morning, which it'll be Friday in a few minutes, Bob Surratt. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Dr. Matthew Brown is with us. And, Doctor, we have someone on the line who has a question. All right. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Very interesting topic. Hey, Dr. Brown, I have a couple quick questions about cannabis. Do you use it in treatment of any of your patients? And then a larger question, with the new recreational cannabis and people having more access to it than they ever have, there might be people just going to try it for aches and pains or to chill out. Do you anticipate any increase in people having psychological problems from an exposure to cannabis that they haven't had previously?
Yeah, these are good questions. I guess the question is, like, have I signed off on the Illinois medical cannabis form for patients? Yes, I have. The majority of the way that my clients have used it is for struggling with a post-traumatic stress disorder. The way I look at it is a much less problematic benzodiazepine. Benzodiazepines are medications like Xanax, Clonopin, Ativan. They can be helpful in anxiety, but they're extremely, extremely addictive, both physically and psychologically. One of the few agents that if you withdraw from it just abruptly, it could kill you. So anything to avoid that, I think, is positive. And now, as far as things to look out for with recreational cannabis, this is mostly in like the younger age kids. So your brain is growing and developing up until about age 28. And there's a process that happens in your brain called pruning, where the neurons become less and less. So you actually have less connections than you did before between the age of about 16 to 28. And we found that THC, one of the chemicals in cannabis, especially when taken in high amounts, can really disrupt this process of pruning. Mm. We don't really know the full extent of the effects. I think this is where we get some of the reports, or we think, of where maybe some people might have quote unquote lower IQ scores. But again, you know, this is debatable. There is another thing in that cannabis notoriously can be the thing that flips the switch. If you have a genetic predisposition to a psychotic illness like schizophrenia. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that something else wouldn't have flipped that switch. It just means that just cannabis got there first. Mm. So it's kind of a chicken and egg problem. But like I said, with this brain development thing, I have run into a couple of clients who were fairly heavy cannabis users that had this condition that looked a lot like a schizophrenia, but not exactly. It wasn't quite the same, and we really reduced the cannabis, treated with a lot of omega-3 fish oil, some light medications, and a decent amount of talk therapy, and they kind of came back. So I don't know. I think that we are going to see new issues arise. However, I think that as we learn more, this is just going to be a good thing, and I think that decriminalizing all drugs actually would probably be the best path forward, and cannabis being legal for recreational use is certainly less harmful than either tobacco or alcohol, so that's fine.
Well, yeah, no, that makes sense, man. That makes sense. Doc, great question, man.
All right, thanks.
Okay, take care. Doc's a regular listener, doctor, and he's okay. He is a regular cannabis user.
Gotcha.
So it's interesting. Interesting. We have a 847 sends a text that said, wouldn't the psychedelics do some harm from people who are hyper aware or overly vigilant and have difficulty forgetting their past or present pain? Does that, I mean, it depends on the person, correct? It depends on the patient, correct?
Well, actually, the thing that matters most in all psychedelic treatment are three things. Something, it's called drug, set, and setting.
Okay.
So the drug, very obvious, being the agent that you're using to sort of be the catalyst for the procedure. The set being like what the individual brings to the event, and what else is in your body. Like, are there any other drugs?
Or,
what is your intention? All those kind of things. The setting is what's going on around you. So in order to have a positive outcome, you want to, like, optimize all the drug set and setting for treatment. Mm. So this is why, you know, we're saying you want this in a treatment facility. But also, some of these agents have very, very interesting properties, in particular MDMA. It has this effect of being able to – it's very strongly serotonergic, which tends to be associated with, like, that dissociation more, feeling like you're going out into outer space feeling that you might have under the influence of a psychedelic. However, it also has a lot of dopamine, which is a stimulant. And that dopamine kind of brings you back down to earth, so to speak, so you can kind of, like, think a little bit more clearly. And when you're in this sort of in-between state under the influence of MDMA, you can very easily access some of these really traumatic memories and talk about them and process them, but you don't feel bad when you're talking about them.
Yeah.
And so you can really look at them in a different way and start to develop a different relationship with those with those things that happened to you, and maybe they won't plague you quite so much anymore. That's kind of the thought. So what we're seeing.
I gotcha. So I got a basic question. How long does one of these, does a psychedelic session last? I mean, it varies
It varies depending on the agent. I think the shortest acting one that is being researched at all is something like 5-MeO-DMT, which could be as short as something like 10 minutes. MDMA or psilocybin sessions can last up to like maybe about 8 hours. With the MDMA protocol, there is the patient does stay overnight in the testing facility.
Sure. Yeah.
So just to allow them to have like a really, really gradual come down. So that is one of the biggest barriers with a lot of these medications is that the treatment takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And it takes a therapist that can devote that time, and time is expensive. So that's going to be one of the biggest challenges, figuring out how we can scale this a little bit better.
Yeah.
Although naturally groups could be an option. This is done in traditional cultures and also in other therapeutic settings around the world. And that might be the path forward, but I don't know. But we'll see if we can experiment with that after, like I said, it gets out of the research lab.
Right. So, but group therapy—that's does that seem to be a successful way to do this?
Well, I mean, a lot of the like retreat treatment facilities that one might go to around the world are set up in this structure. And there's something very powerful that can happen in a group dynamic where people share their feelings and their events with one another. Now, of course, it gets a lot trickier for the facilitator to make sure that everybody is getting all their needs met when they're in a group. Also, arguably, that might not be the most optimal way for someone to be introduced for their first time doing psychedelics. However, again, a lot of people have, and they do quite well. But in a perfect world, I would probably say have a very one-on-one experience first. Once we know that you can tolerate something like that, then going into a group setting would possibly be optimal, although it's just theory, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Matthew Brown, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been fascinating to talk to you. If people want to do maybe some research online, are there ways to study this or look into it?
So perhaps one of the best resources just to get more knowledgeable about some of the research, MAPS.org, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. They're the ones funding a lot of the MDMA trials. USONA, this is the organization trying to bring psilocybin to market. Their website, fairly good too. PubMed, honestly, is a wonderful resource if you don't mind reading research articles.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, okay. that's where I would send people to go to read more about this. Another thing is if people are in town, I do host a meetup group. It's called Psychedelics and the Future of Psychiatry. It is free and open to everybody.
Oh, great.
We meet once a month and read different journal articles and talk about them. So it's free to join, just Psychedelics and the Future of Psychiatry. Meetup.
Okay. All right, there you go. Okay, Doc. The Giglio Show here on 720 WGN, and we are here until 4 a.m. It is Friday, so that means our regular Friday features will be coming up at 3 o'clock. No VIX picks this morning. We'll get that back next week, starting at 2:30. And at 2:30, we will play some classic stand-up, as we've been doing now every morning. And this is we're going to play Eddie Murphy on The Tonight Show. His first time ever on The Tonight Show, and it was back in January of 1982. Yeah. And by the way, the Johnny Carson show, the reruns are on Antenna TV every night, and you should watch them because they're spectacular. And so we got our regular Friday features that would be Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And we play those back every Friday morning. Nick D Show Spies, that's when you listen 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time mentions me or the show, we want to know about it, you become a spy. Jot the info down, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and we play those back every Friday. And we've got You Big Dummy, that's where we read real news stories of real people doing real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. And, of course, Fly Jams Friday, when we get a little funky here. And Luscious Hushes will spin the disc. By the way, Tom Hush is my producer. You were out for a couple of days. You were sick. You're back. I'm glad you're back, buddy.
Yeah, glad to be back.
Yeah.
Glad to be back.
You're feeling better?
Better.
Yeah.
Better. I no longer am curious as to what day it is.
Yeah.
You know, but feeling more or less okay. So I wanted to be here for the Friday features because
well,
it's amazing.
It's great to have you back, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to thank Ben for filling in.
Always
he did a fine job, and that's all great, but it's always great when you're here, buddy. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and so here's a story. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's office said on Thursday that an $18.8 million settlement was reached with Time Warner Cable on behalf of more than 170,000 consumers throughout the state who paid for internet speeds that they did not receive. The majority of the money, about $16.9 million, will be returned to consumers through automatic credits on their monthly cable or internet bills from Spectrum, the parent company of Time Warner Cable. The L.A. County District Attorney's Office is the largest direct restitute order ever secured by its office in the consumer protection lawsuit. The lawsuit, which was filed by the District Attorney of Los Angeles, Riverside, and San Diego counties in Los Angeles County Superior Court, alleged unlawful business practices. Prosecutors accused Time Warner Cable, beginning in 2013, of using misleading advertising practices to lure consumers to pay for high-speed internet services the company could not deliver. The company did not admit or deny fault under the statement. The district attorney's office said some customers were issued outdated modems, making it impossible for them to receive the higher bandwidth that they'd purchased. Others paid for higher internet speeds that Time Warner's infrastructure just could not deliver. They are eligible to receive approximately $90 at a one-time credit on their internet or cable bills. A few consumers were issued outdated modems. Let's see. And in addition to internet customers in California, they will be offered one or two free services. Those who are cable TV subscribers will be offered 3 free months of Showtime. Wait a minute. If they do not already subscribe to Showtime, which is valued at $45. I'm sorry. I don't know why I find that. Here, have some free Showtime. Why do I find that so funny? I have Showtime, and I like Showtime.
Just take it. Just take the show.
Here you go. Shut up and take Showtime. Seriously, I don't know why I find that so amusing, but I do. customers with only internet services will be offered 1 free month of an entertainment streaming package, Spectrum Choice, valued at approximately $40. The total value of these free services will depend on how many people sign up. Time Warner Cable also agreed to pay $1.9 million in litigation costs, split evenly 3 ways to the prosecuting agencies under the settlement. According to the L.A. District Attorney's Office, as a result of the lawsuit, Time Warner Cable also agreed on a prohibition on advertising internet speeds it knows or should know it cannot constantly deliver consistently in peak hours. The company is also required to ensure that customers are issued equipment that can deliver advertised speeds. Well, yeah. Here, just take some Showtime. Oh, man. You don't have cable.
No, I do not. I'm a cord cutter.
Okay. I am not. I proudly have cable, and I have like 19 premium channels because I'm a loser. All right. 312-981-7200. Do you have any cable stories that you would like to share with us? Everybody, I think, had a nightmare interaction with their cable company or had some serious cable issues. If you do, and you have, 312-981-7200, talk or text. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Bury the bottle, mama. It's grapefruit wine.
Kick off your high heel sneakers. It's party time. The girls don't see.
We're on AM. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. God, I love the Dan. Tom, you a fan of the Dan?
I do like the Dan.
Because there's, it's a very divisive group.
Which is sad, because they shouldn't be.
I think Steely Dan rules the planet, quite frankly. but I know a lot of people who hate them. I don't think anybody ever says, Steely Dan, they're okay. It's either you love Steely Dan or you hate Steely Dan. I love them. Have I ever told you the story about when we went to my buddy John and I went out to Poplar Creek? Now Poplar Creek's before your time.
Yeah.
It was an outdoor concert. By the way, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're going to get into cable nightmare stories. 312-981-7204 is the number. But anyway, so Poplar Creek was this outdoor concert venue in, what suburb was it in? I can't remember what suburb it was in. But it was in Poplar Creek. I can't remember. Maybe you can look it up.
Hoffman Estates.
Hoffman Estates, exactly. So we're out there at Poplar Creek, and we're at this thing called the Rock and Soul Review. Okay? and it featured a whole bunch of different artists. It was a review, so it was a whole bunch of different artists. They'd come out on stage, they'd do some of their songs, they'd leave, another act would come out, they'd leave, another act would come out. And like Boz Scaggs was on the bill, and Phoebe Snow and some other people, including Donald Fagen and Walter, why am I blanking on Walter's last name?
Becker.
Walter Becker, God bless his soul. Walter Becker and Donald Fagen. And, you know, for people who don't know, Steely Dan, it's just those two guys, and they were essentially studio musicians. They never toured. Like, Steely Dan did not tour. They were not a touring band. And even if you don't like Steely Dan, you have to admire, like ABBA. I don't like ABBA, but you have to admire how unbelievably beautiful their recordings are. Like, they're impeccably produced. The sound is magnificent. So, you know, you never get to see these guys live. So we're part of the Rock and Soul Review, and my friend John and I, massive Dan fans, like huge Steely Dan fans, ridiculous. And we're there, and so, you know, everybody's coming. Boss Skaggs does, whatever his hits are. He does a couple of his, another person comes out, and then Becker and Fagen come out. And like I've said, this was like in the late 80s, early 90s.
This was maybe this date, August 16th, 1992.
Yeah, was that the Rock and Soul Review at Poplar Creek?
Yep, as written up by Greg Kot.
Do they have does he list off the other acts?
Yeah, let's see. So he's got Steely Dan there, specifically mentioning the fact that Donald Fagen and Walter Becker hadn't worked together in a while.
It was, by the way, one of the most magnificent moments of my life was when they took the stage. The rest of I remember Boz Scaggs and a couple of other acts, but without question, the only thing that mattered that evening was Fagen and Becker. That was the only thing that mattered. So they come out. They don't tour. They haven't been together for years. All the Dan... Because let me explain something to you. It was 95% men in their 30s or 40s. That was the that was the crowd that was there. That's the target audience. That's the Steely Dan audience. So they come out, and they bust into Deacon Blues. Okay, so they do Deacon Blues, and everybody is standing up, and, you know, you don't see these guys do it live. Deacon Blues is one of my favorite songs of all time, my favorite Steely Dan song ever. So they bust out Deacon Blues, and they finish it, 6 minutes, you know, of Deacon Blues. They finish it. I'm not exaggerating, Tom. 5 to 6 minutes standing ovation, applause. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. Men were crying. We were crying at Poplar Creek because we just saw Steely Dan play Deacon Blues live, and the Hoffman Estates was flooded with men's tears. Like, we were just like, I was hugging my friend. We were crying, and like, it was a 6 minute ovation. One of the greatest moments I've ever seen in live music of all time was seeing those guys reunite, do Deacon Blues in front of a bunch of dorks who love Steely Dan, weeping openly.
Here's the rest of your lineup.
Okay.
So you got Steely Dan.
Yeah.
You got Michael McDonald.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got Boz Scaggs.
Yep.
Phoebe Snow.
Yeah, Phoebe Snow, yep.
Chuck Jackson.
Okay.
That's what you got.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
That's your New York Rock and Soul Review
right
at Poplar Creek.
And Michael McDonald was on stage with the Dan.
Yeah,
because he's played with them, you know, several times. But oh man, that moment, Deacon Blues, man, I'm telling you, we were openly weeping. Like, I was like hugging men I didn't even know. We were all just crying, a river of tears, of man tears, filling up Hoffman Estates because we just saw Steely Dan reunite and play Deacon Blues. I mean, they went on, they played a few more songs, but it was Deacon Blues. When they open with Deacon Blues, it's like, well, now I can die. I've lived a complete life now.
Can I throw out an alternative perspective that I only recently got?
All right.
I saw, you know, saw my family over the holidays. I know we're going back a couple months now, but I happened to bring up Poplar Creek to
what? Why?
I
this is before
about,
your birth.
I know, but I was sitting there with my uncles, and they were talking about the different venues. I was like, "Oh, did you guys ever go to Poplar Creek?" Because I never went because I didn't know it existed.
Yeah.
And my uncle Vince is like, "Yeah, I went to Poplar Creek. I think I only went like one time though." I was like, "Oh, who'd you see?" He's like, "I went to go see Steely Dan." Worst concert I've ever seen in my entire life.
No!
I was like, "No way."
No way.
I couldn't stop laughing. I really could. He's like, "What? Why is that so funny?" I was like, "Oh boy, you have no idea." I have it on good authority that at least seven men were crying at that concert.
Well, did he go to the Rock and Soul Review or did he see Steely Dan? Because they reunited. Well, you know what?
That's a good question.
He was probably at the Rock and Soul Review because they didn't reunite. They didn't play for another year. And I think at that point, Poplar Creek was on the downside because it was popular in the 80s. Poplar Creek was big in the 80s. That's where you went to see shows. I've been to Poplar Creek like 900 times. Oh man! But see, that's what I'm saying. The Dan is maybe one of the most divisive bands of all time. Seriously, I mean, because I've talked to people who are like, "That's the worst band. I can't stand Steely Dan. How can you like Steely Dan?" And they're seriously one of my favorite bands of all time. I love Steely Dan, for all these years, you know, talking about Steely Dan. Seriously, is it your uncle?
Yeah.
Your uncle, there's a legitimate large group of people who share that opinion of Steely Dan.
Yeah.
I am not among them. I am on the polar opposite.
It's just funny because you guys are two Northwest Side Italian Americans from the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
Maybe what you guys would be maybe, I don't know, 6 years apart.
Yeah.
One man loves the Dan, man does
but
not.
That's the thing about that band.
That's how it is.
No. It is... That's it. When you talk about the Dan, you either love them or you can't stand them. And the argument that I get about hating them all the time is that they're soulless. You know, like it's cold, it's soulless music, and I don't see that at all, but that's the argument that I get from most people, is that it's like cold, soulless music. It's too pristine. A lot of people say it's too pristine. It sounds too pristine. I'm like, all right, well...
Too bad.
But again, you know, you love ABBA. I hate ABBA. But I can acknowledge that their production is fantastic. So, all right. Anyway, how did we get into this? Oh, because you played Steely Dan. You played a Steely Dan as a bump.
Wow.
River of Tears. 1992. A river of tears flooding. Man tears flooding Hoffman Estates because Steely Dan just played Deacon Blues.
There was a good harvest that year.
Oh, it was exactly. It was hard getting out of the parking lot, though. Muddy. All right, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Do you ever have issues with your cable company? Do you have nightmare stories about cable? 312-981-7200 on the Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN.
Leroy, boy, is that you? I thought your post-hanging days were through. Sunken eyes and full of sighs, tell no lies. I tell you now, we're gonna pull you through. There's only one thing left that we can do. We gotta get you a woman. It's like nothing else to make you show your love. We gotta get you a woman. We better get walking. We're wasting time talking now. Leroy, boy, you're my friend. You say how and I'll say when. Come and meet me down the street. Take a seat. It's my treat. You may not ever get.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here on WGN till 4 o'clock this morning. It is Friday, so that means our regular Friday features will begin at 3 o'clock with You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and Fly Jams Friday. Luscious Hushits will play the hits. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. By the way, Todd Rundgren, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Every time we play a Todd bump, I have to remind everybody, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Motley Crue, or is Motley Crue in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? I don't think they are. Bon Jovi is, Bon Jovi's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Todd Rundgren is not. That's a sentence I just said. So the L.A. County DA announces an $18.8 million settlement with Time Warner over internet speeds and more. So there was a payout because they lied and they're a cable company and they didn't do well. If you have a nightmare cable story or some issues with your cable company that you would like to share with us, and I think everybody has at least one or two stories about having some bad cable experience, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. My favorite part of this story as we were reading it is that they're just going to give you some they're going to give you some showtime. It's like, yeah, we were screwing you over a little bit here. Hey, enjoy Showtime. Enjoy Kidding with Jim Carrey. There you go. Just take that. That'll do. Not, I don't have anything against Showtime. I have Showtime. I have Showtime, and I like Showtime. I watch movies on Showtime. I watch their original programming, and they have stuff that I enjoy. But I just think it's hilarious that. Like, it's like, yeah, okay, look, we screwed you guys over. It's an $18.8 million settlement. Enjoy Showtime. Just enjoy some Showtime. So, you know, I have to say, I have not had a terrible time with my cable. I know people who have. You know, I have Comcast, I have Xfinity cable. I do not have that as my internet service or my phone service, and that seems to be more of an issue because my folks also have Xfinity, you know, / Comcast, but they have it for their internet service and their phone, and that seems to be more of an issue than just the cable. They seem to have a lot more problems with the internet / phone thing, and. And my parents have had some stories, you know, where they're on the phone for 45 minutes trying to get some help, or they're, you know, they had to have somebody come out and switch out boxes or do something. But my parents have had more issues, not necessarily with the TV or the cable, but with the internet service and the phone service. That seems to be more problematic. So I really don't have anything bad to say. I know a lot of people hate Xfinity and you know, and they hate Comcast. I don't. Now watch, I'll go home, my cable will be out for 4 weeks. You know what I mean? I'll go. But no, I had to swap out a box because it was old and they had to bring me a new box, and the guy came out. He was fine. Took him 10 minutes, switched it out. Internet back on, cable back on, you know, all that stuff. So, but actually, I do have a Wi-Fi in the house, and that's, you know, provided by Xfinity. But I haven't really had any issue. Now, what do you do about Wi-Fi?
Well, I have RCN.
Oh, you have RCN. Okay.
Wait, hold on. So I'm confused. So you've got Comcast, Xfinity as your cable provider.
Yeah.
They give you the router. Who's providing your internet?
Them, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got the package there, but not the phone.
No. I don't have a landline.
Okay.
My parents do.
Yeah.
Well, because they're in their 70s, of course they have a landline. But no, I don't have a landline. I just have my cell. But yeah, I get the internet and I get the cable through Xfinity. So they provide it. And every once in a while the cable goes out, or not the cable, the Wi-Fi, you know, I have some issues. Could you look at those little, because what's the thing called?
What, router?
Yeah, the router, and it's got those lights.
Yeah,
that are on.
Yeah,
and every once in a while, if like you know, because it's usually four lights that are on, and one of them on the bottom is kind of like flashing a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean every router's a little different, but yeah, usually one of them's showing like that's
it's a little it kind of like does that. Yeah, yes, there you go. And by the way, we have to make sure we play back Lou Manfredini talking about stealing signs.
You got it.
We'll do that later. But anyway, And when I see it's down to like two or one, that means my Wi-Fi's out. And every once in a while, I'll call up and go, what the hell? And then they're like, hey, listen, why don't you turn it off and turn it back on? And that's like the thing, right? That's always the universal fix. If you have a problem with something, turn it off, turn it back on.
Yeah.
Reboot it, moron.
I'm not kidding. My dad worked in IT for a long time. That was basically the fix for everything.
Exactly.
Have you tried turning it off and back on again?
Yeah. That's why, you know, I made that mistake. I don't make that mistake anymore. Before, you know, I call customer service. You don't get a real person. You got to be online for, you know, you got to be on hold for like 9 hours. And then they just say, turn it off and turn it back on. After I wait on hold for like an hour and a half, they're like, just turn it off and turn it back on, moron. And I'm like, oh, I turn the button and they're like, oh, it's working now. Yeah, right. Click. How was your experience with customer service? Would you mind taking a survey? All right, here's John on WGN. Hey, John.
Hi, Nick.
Hey.
When I went to school at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls, we had a closed-circuit TV.
Oh, man.
And,
okay.
Okay, so there's this guy has to be a TV engineer, and he's got to tweak and calibrate the equipment, right?
Right.
Okay. So anyway, I took a TV production course, and he's the engineer. So anyway, just before we graduated, we asked this guy what his major was, and he said, general studies.
General studies?
Yeah. We said to him, okay, what are you going to do with a degree like that? And he goes, I don't know. So anyway, when I get out of school, I go down to Cedar Rapids, and I'm looking for any kind of a job in broadcasting, right?
Right.
Okay, so I go into this cable company, and it's Cox.
Okay, Cox Cable.
And I walk into the office door, and, I see the same guy that was a TV engineer up at University of Northern Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And he's walking down the hall, and I go, hey, can you help me get a job? And he looks at me, and he goes, no. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had a bad experience. So I eventually get another kind of radio and TV job. Well, years later, I was doing some research, and I kind of wondered what ever happened to this guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, guess what he's doing now?
What?
He's the CEO of Cox Cable in Atlanta, Georgia. It is the third largest cable company, and this guy has given, like, millions to the University of Northern Iowa where I went to school.
Oh,
and he won't look anybody up that majored in radio and TV.
That's fantastic, John. That is hilarious.
Oh, I got something quick. Can I tell you quick something about Steely Dan?
Oh, sure, man, yeah.
Okay, again, where I went to school at UNI, which is up in Cedar Falls, they were going to have a big concert in the spring of 74, and it was supposed to be the Eagles, REO Speedwagon, and Steely Dan, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, they all have the same manager. I can't think of what this guy's name is. He managed the Eagles.
Okay.
Okay. Well, okay, so this concert is not indoors. It's outdoors. It's a nice spring day.
Yeah.
And, okay, so, you know, everybody's into REO Speedwagon because they have Ride and Storm out.
Right.
The Eagles have already gone out.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, Steely Dan is supposed to play this concert, and the Eagles and Steely Dan got in an argument about top billing. And Steely Dan decided they weren't going to play if the Eagles were going to get top billing.
Oh.
And Steely Dan never played live again, right?
Yeah. Very rarely did they play live.
Right.
Yeah, very rarely. Oh, man. Okay. Thanks, John.
Goodbye.
Isn't that a weird lineup? Eagles, REO Speedwagon, Steely Dan?
I've heard stranger things.
I remember I went to go see... Because they did, like... the Super Bowl of Rock. If it was at Soldier Field, it was the Super Bowl of Rock. If it was at Comiskey, it was the World Series of Rock, obviously. And I went to go see one of the World Series of Rock, and it was Pablo Cruz. Love will find a way. It was Pablo Cruz, Steve Miller, and the Eagles. And my dad and I went because of Steve Miller. I hate the Eagles, and I agree with the Big Lebowski on that one. I agree with the dude. So Pablo Cruz comes out. They only had the one hit, and they played for like 40 minutes, and we were like, what the hell? Get off the stage. Bring out Steve Miller. Steve Miller comes out, plays about an hour, and it was great. And then the Eagles come out. We stayed for two songs, and I was like, let's get the hell out of here. Let's get out of here. Super Bowl of Rock, man. Or no, that was the World Series of Rock at Comiskey. All right. 312-981-7200. And we were going to talk about the most hated companies in the world. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio on WGN. Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN, continuing here on a Friday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah, Burger King is using moldy Whoppers to advertise. We have the real names of some fictional characters. Classic stand-up at 2:30, as we now do every morning at 2:30. We'll play some Eddie Murphy. Tom was out sick. I forgot it at 2:30. We did it at 3:30 yesterday because I forgot at 2:30. And then Ben reminded me and went, hey, comedy?
And you were like, yes, please.
Yes. So we played some Carlin. We played the George Carlin's, one of his most legendary bits, which is the baseball versus football bit that he does. And then he did it on The Tonight Show, and we played that back. So, and The Tonight Show reruns, The Johnny Carson Show, are on Antenna TV every night, and you should watch them because they're great. And the Friday feature is coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So we're talking about the most hated companies in America. What do you think makes this list? And it's the first one on the list is Facebook. Facebook and its co-founder and CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, have come under fire in recent years from both public and legislators. After the popular social media site was used to spread misinformation, causing election interference in 2016 and contributing to political polarization in the U.S. and abroad, the company's reputation took another serious hit when it was discovered that consultant group Cambridge Analytica harvested personal data from as many as 87 million users without their knowledge or consent, using it to tailor ads used in the 2016 presidential election and other political campaigns. So people hate Facebook.
Good.
Yeah. I'm on Facebook. I use it all the time. I don't know.
They're taking your data.
Oh, I know. But you know what? If you don't think that your data is already out there, then
that's
you're,
true.
You know, you're being real naive. In this day and age, it's everything's out there.
I think it was, it's an old adage. But my dad said it to me once, and I never forgot it, is that if you're not paying for something, it means that you're the product.
You know, that's very sage right there.
Yeah. He did not coin that. That's been out there for a while.
Yeah, but that's really sage, yeah. And I don't mean the spice. Okay, so most hated companies in America, we start off with Facebook. Anybody have issues with Facebook? I mean, I use it all the time. I'm on it. I post stuff. I like to let people know what I'm watching on TV.
What? God forbid.
I think it's important that people know I watch The Masked Singer at 5 o'clock in the morning.
It seems like kind of a way for you to just let it all out. Just be like, listen.
I posted a thing yesterday morning at 5. You know, because as soon as I got home, I watched The Masked Singer because I love The Masked Singer. So, I watched it, and I just posted this thing just to sum up my life. I just said, it's 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm watching a guy dressed up like a taco singing a Frank Sinatra song. That's my life.
What a world this is here in 2020.
That's some dude dressed up as a taco singing a Frank Sinatra song. That's what I'm doing at 5 o'clock in the morning.
You think you could do that in the 70s? No.
No way, man.
Only now.
I have a very great life. Get to go home and watch a taco sing a Frank Sinatra song.
The thing that scares me about Facebook is that now it's become, you know, typically people used to have, you know, photo albums, like physical photo albums. Like, I could go back to my house right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And actually look at real physical photos. Yeah.
So now I've got, you know, a decade of my life. Like, I've been using Facebook, me as a young person, like almost pretty much a decade of my life.
Yeah.
So photographed all on the internet. Yeah, yeah. I don't physically have those anywhere. They're just on Facebook. So if I leave, they're gone.
Yeah.
What do I do?
I change my Facebook photo avatar thing. I change it every day, except for the weekends. I leave it open on the weekends. And right now, it's the yodeling dude who climbs up the mountain on Price is Right. That's my picture, because I love him.
The game that no one can win.
Oh man, come on now! I love to see him fall off.
I know, but you can't win.
No, you can't. If you lose, if he falls off. You know, I got to say, there's, you know, I don't like James Corden, and I know this sounds like a like I'm not on track here, but I can't stand James Corden. But he did do a bit that I thought was absolutely brilliant on his show, and it was he had somebody, because they tape Corden tapes, and as Craigie Ferg used to, they're right next to Price is Right, which is why Craigie and Jeff hosted Price is Right, and Drew Carey hosted Craig's show. They on April Fools they switched, and it was brilliant. But anyway, because everything Craigie Ferg did was brilliant. But anyway, they tape right next to Price is Right. And so Corden did this thing where he was like, you know what, we're going to do the cliffhangers. That's the name of the game with the yodeling dude that climbs up the mountain. And so he had somebody come out from the audience and you know, guess the price of something. They were way off. And so the yodeling dude, lee, la, lee, la, lee, and he goes up and he falls off the mountain. And then they're like, oh, man. And then, like, paramedics come up the mountain. And then, like, his kids and wife come up and see that he's dead. And they did this whole bit where it was like it was the tragedy of the yodeling guy falling off the mountain. Ambulance, you know, police show up, wife, kids. It was hilarious, and it's actually one of the only funny things that James Corden has ever done, but I thought it was great. It also helps that I love the yodeling guy. So here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Another thing I have against Facebook is that you know, they do all the stuff where they won't – I mean, they'll post political ads and know where lies and not do anything about it. But, yeah, I mean, that's not the reason I called. Okay, Universal Music Group. Okay, the two big things I have against them are, one, they started out as big, and then they got huge by gobbling up other conglomerates like PolyGram and half of EMI. I mean, they're just too big.
Yeah.
Okay, and then there was this scandal a while back where, you know, they had this fire in their vault where all these priceless master recordings of people like Chuck Berry were destroyed, and they didn't publicly admit to it for 10 years.
Wow. Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, you can look it up. I mean, your call screener knew about it.
Yeah, well, he's my producer.
Producer, okay. I'm very sorry.
That's okay.
It's all good, Mark.
It's all right, Mark. All right, Mark, thanks, man. Universal Music Group. Take care.
You too. Have a great show.
See ya. There you go.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure the master tapes to, like, Nevermind are gone.
What?
Ray Charles, as he mentioned, Ray Charles, Chuck Berry, master tapes, gone.
Well, how did I not know about this?
Because the fire happened, I want to say, in, like, 2008,
okay.
2009.
All right.
And then, as Mark mentioned, they didn't say that anything happened until there was a New York Times piece, I want to say last year.
Wow, that's terrible. That's terrible.
Exposed it. And because the artist started being like, hey, oh, by the way, can I see those master recordings? And
that's
like,
terrible, oh, man.
Well, about that. Yeah. Wow. Totally lost the time.
That's terrible. Wow. All right. So Facebook, in addition to in a Universal Music Group. How about WeWork? That's a company that's hated. Shared office space company WeWork appeared to be headed for a great 2019. It was preparing for an initial public offering with the company valued at $47 billion. Then some reports surfaced a strange behavior and erratic management from CEO Adam Neumann including potential conflicts of interest. The IPO filing showed the company was bleeding cash, forcing it to halt its IPO. With investors increasingly dissatisfied, Newman eventually stepped down. His golden parachute was reportedly worth over $1 billion, even though his apparent mismanagement of the company led to 2,400 employees being laid off. Japanese conglomerate SoftBank is now the majority owner of the company after its valuation has plummeted to $5 billion. Wow. Okay. Also a hated company in America, Pacific Gas and Electric. In November of 2018, the deadliest and most destructive wildfire in California's history blazed through the county, killing 85 people and destroying over 18,000 structures. A report released by state regulators at the end of 2019 confirmed what had already been largely believed, that energy utility PG&E was directly responsible for the blaze. The report found that the company had violated a dozen state safety rules, and that the violations were not unique to the events that caused the 2018 fire, but rather, quote, indicative of an overall pattern of inadequate inspection and maintenance of PG&E's transmission facilities. A 2019 Wall Street Journal report found the company was responsible for over 1,500 fires, man, in a six-year span. Good Lord. In 2019, PG&E agreed to two settlements related to fires it was responsible for, an $11 billion insurance settlement and a $13.5 billion settlement for individual victims. In December, the company filed for Chapter 11. Besides the public outrage over the fires, PG&E has not done its reputation any favors based on reviews by customers. The company has a D-minus rating on the Better Business Bureau site. It's also tied with another company as the third worst rated energy utility out of 26 investor-owned companies as scored by the ACSI in 2019. Okay. More of the most hated companies in America. 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us. Nick DiGilio on WGN.
From Dallas, he was having a beer at Crystal Palace. He said, honey, you won't be alone for long. I gotta make just one more stop to pick up a ring in Little Rock, then I'm gonna hit this semi straight for home. 14 wheels are whining, four the headlights shining. Him and that semi been away too long. Hope he don't get stopped for speed, cause I've got everything he's needing waiting for him right here at home. Oh, he's got that big old engine singing, singing my favorite song. And I know he's heading my way, rolling down that highway. Tonight my baby's coming home.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m., and then we'll head over to Bradley Place on the TV side and hear the early morning news from Channel 9, and then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt has your morning drive. It's Friday morning. That means all of the regular Friday features will be coming up after 3 o'clock, straight out of context. Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday. Requests at 312-981-7200, and also 312-981-7200 for talk and text. As we talk about some of the most hated companies in America, Robert sends in a text that said, Turner, that bought most of the classic cartoons, they redid a lot of the voices on classics like Tom and Jerry and Woody Woodpecker and destroyed original voices and soundtracks. So that would be the Ted Turner Company? Yeah. So, yeah. Remember when everything, he colorized everything? Like, everything was colorized?
Well, he wanted to, yeah.
Yeah.
He was really all about it.
He wanted to colorize Citizen Kane. I almost put my foot through the TV.
I think Casablanca as well, he wanted to colorize.
Yeah. People went nuts. Because he did colorize a bunch of stuff, and, you know, and it all looks stupid. So, I don't know. All right, so most hated companies. Purdue Pharma. As the opioid epidemic rages in America, Purdue Pharma and its founders, the Sackler family, have received much of the blame. Purdue began selling the painkiller OxyContin in 1996. In recent years, it has been sued over and over, including by several state attorneys general. These lawsuits allege that Purdue deceived patients and doctors about the risks of becoming addicted to the drug when advertising it. To settle the suits, the company paid out over $10 billion and as a result declared bankruptcy. The Sackler family itself was required to pay at least $3 billion and relinquish control of the company. As the Sackler name has become more linked to America's opioid problems, several prominent museums, galleries, and universities have refused their donations. And Tufts University renamed several buildings that featured the Sackler name. Boeing. Boeing is one of America's most hated companies. Once a trusted aviation brand, Boeing now faces intense scrutiny in a slew of lawsuits following several recent accidents and incidents regarding the 737 MAX jetliner. In October 2018, a Boeing 737 MAX crashed shortly after takeoff. A similar incident took place in March of 2019. Over 150 people were killed in both accidents. The FAA grounded all further flights of the 737 MAX, and Boeing suspended its production. After the crashes, it was revealed that Boeing knew of the issue for years, but did not disclose the information. Company engineers told CNN that the 737 MAX relied on a single sensor that is prone to malfunctions and would only work effectively with an optional safety feature most of its customers did not purchase. In both crashes, it appears that sensor sent a signal to the plane was stalling when it was not. This caused the aircraft to pitch down. Though Boeing first learned of this issue in 2017, company executives did not think it would make the planes less safe. Since March of 2019, Boeing's stock price has fallen by 25%. And people wonder why I'm terrified to fly. I know it's irrational. Over the years, many people have told me, hey, man, it's safer than driving. But the thing is, when you're driving, you're not 30,000 feet above the road. So, you know. 312-981-7200. We got some other texts here coming in talking about hated companies in America. 816 says, Nick, how about Equifax and the data breach of 147 million people? Let's see, you monitor people's credit, you give access to critical info for 170 million, and now you want to make it up by giving me free credit monitoring for a couple of years. No thanks. They at least could give you showtime. 708, General Electric stock has underperformed the market in the last 10 years, and they just gave the new CEO $21 million a year. That's where you just find money. Did they give him showtime? That's the big question. Because that's what everybody wants. 708 says, a tie, Comcast and Disney, or does one own the other? It's all about money. Disney owns everything, basically. I mean, they pretty much do. So, all right, we got more of America's most hated companies. If you have a story or a comment, it's 312-981-7200 for talk or text right here on 720 WGN as the Nick DiGilio Show continues.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. I said, Georgia, Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear. Moonlight through the pines.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studios in downtown Chicago. 312-981-7200 for talk and text if you want to join us. We were talking about some of America's most hated companies. Frontier Communication. Like many modern corporations, Frontier Communications provides several services to its customers, yet none are well-reviewed. Three of the 20 worst-reviewed services on the ACSI are Frontier's. The company's fixed-line television or telephone service received a score of 61 compared to the industry average of 71. Its subscription TV service scored a 57 compared to an industry average of 62. And its internet service received a score of 55, the lowest score awarded out of the more than 300 company services reviewed in 2019. According to its employees, Frontier is also the worst place to work. It has a score of 2.4 out of 5.0 on employee review site Glassdoor, tied for the third worst score among more than 800 large companies. Barely one out of five employees who left reviews on the site would recommend their friends work there. The company has an average of one star out of five among customer responses at the Better Business Bureau website. And the BBB gives the service provider a score of F. Okay. People do not like Frontier Communications. I guess I'm not familiar. But I guess, you know, when you have when people don't like to work there, that's not a good thing. When a majority of the people that work for the company are like, no, you don't want to work there. Okay, the next of the most hated companies in America, the Houston Astros. In 2020, Major League Baseball reported that since their 2017 World Series winning season, the Houston Astros had used a video feed in their dugout to see what the opposing pitcher planned to throw. Someone would relay the information to their batters by banging on a trash can or making some other noise. Rumors of rule breaking had circulated for years, but no action was taken until former Astros pitcher Mike Fiers admitted the team cheated in late 2019. Hinch and general manager Jeff Luhnow were each banned for a season and then fired. The Astros then were fined $5 million and stripped of four draft picks. Alex Cora, who was Houston's bench coach in 2017 before becoming manager of the Boston Red Sox, parted ways with Boston. Before the cheating scandal broke, the Astros had already made themselves less than likable. After securing a trip to the 2019 World Series, assistant general manager Brandon Taubman taunted female journalists, saying, "Thank God we got Osuna." The team was criticized for trading relief pitcher Roberto Osuna after he was suspended for violating the league's domestic violence policy. When the journalist wrote about the incident, the team released a statement saying that there was an attempt to fabricate a story and then later apologized and fired Taubman. Jeez. I mean, I didn't know about some of this other stuff here. You know? I mean, that's horrible. I mean, obviously, we all knew about the whole the stealing signs. Oh, by the way, speaking of stealing signs, you know, our own Lou Manfredini knows exactly what stealing signs sounds like. Do we have that, Tom?
Ta-ta-tu-ta-ti.
So if you can imagine, you know, there's the Strohs. Bottom of the ninth. You know, yeah. This is important stuff. And then you just, you know, look over to the bullpen.
Yeah.
Ta-ta-tu-ta-ti.
For people who have not heard this before, what's the context of this? Lou Manfredini was talking about...
He was talking about exactly this. He was talking about the Astros.
About the Astros and stealing signs.
And whether or not cheating is part of baseball. Right. Because it's, I mean, there's more than just the stealing. You know, there was stuff with like pine tar, you know.
Oh, sure.
And whatnot. You know, and he was talking to Joe Brand.
Right.
And we'll just rewind it here.
Okay.
And just play a little bit of the whole thing.
All right.
Grant, they put their fingers between their legs and they got nail polish on, right? And they're going, ta ta tu ta ti.
A I feel like I'm going to have to call. We have to call him someday, right?
And tell him
about this.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. There's no question about it. And the next time we have Esmeralda on, we have to play this for her.
Yeah.
Because Esmeralda loves when Lou Manfredini is out of context, which we'll do later on this morning. But one more time.
All right. All right, just for you.
Ta ta tu ta ti.
I just find that endlessly amusing. Ta ta tu ta ti. What does that even mean? I have to ask Lou, is he nuts? Is Lou nuts?
You have to visit him at one of his many Ace Hardware locations.
I love Lou.
Oh, he's amazing.
He's a great guy. By the way, you know, the whole Seattle Sutton thing, he looks fantastic.
He's looking great. Stuck to it.
He looks fantastic.
He's always been a guy that he sticks to what he wants to do.
Yeah.
When I first started working at GN, like, just part-timing. First thing someone asked me was, hey, do you know Lou Manfredini? I was like, I produced for him a couple times. Like, yeah, can we meet him? Can we meet Mr. Fix-It? I was like, yeah, of course. Sure, yeah. I guess I'll ask him. He's a nice guy, nice enough guy. And he was kind enough to stop down back when we were at Trib Tower.
Yeah. No, here's the thing, and Lou would also agree with this and admit this. I owe my career to Roy Leonard. So does Lou.
Well, yeah, because he was on Saturdays.
He was on. Right. Well, no, he was on like a he. They would do a Mr. Fix-It segment. That's how it started.
Yeah,
like Roy loved Lou. He thought, you know, it was great, and the Mr. Fix-It segment started on Roy Leonard's show.
Right.
That's how it started, and so like Lou and I are both like incredibly indebted to Roy. And I remember at Roy's funeral when Roy passed away. Lou and I just kind of looked at each other as we were walking out. We just kind of looked at each other and we nodded and was like, that's the man right there.
You know, he's got a degree in musical theater.
Wait, what?
He went to Millikan.
What? Lou Manfredini has a degree in musical theater?
Let me make sure it's... Let me make sure it's musical theater.
Hold on, I'm sorry. My mind has just been officially blown. How... Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It, the big guy. Has a degree in musical theater? So if I walked up to him and I said, do a number from Pippin?
You know, I'm not sure if he has... I'm pretty sure he has a degree, but he went to Millikan University.
Okay.
For, on a musical theater scholarship.
No, come on.
Yeah.
How did I not know that?
Mm-hmm.
No wonder Roy liked him. What? All right, that's it. That's it. We are going to do a production of Godspell together.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Godspell?
I've not.
You haven't seen the movie either? You ever seen it?
Nope.
You know the song Day by Day?
Oh, yeah.
Day by Day, oh dear Lord, three things I pray. I love that song. Victor Garber played the Jesus character in that. You know Victor Garber, who would go on to be like an Alias, and yeah, he was Jesus in the original production of Godspell and in the movie. That movie's ridiculous, but I love it. It's one of those. And I love that song. I love Day by Day. But it's funny because I've mentioned this before on the air. You know, like when I went to Luther North, which was a Lutheran school, so we had like a chapel service every Wednesday, and we had religion classes and stuff like that. But like a lot of the football coaches would be stuck with the religion class. So they would like, yeah, you're going to have to do the religion class. So we'd have like a football coach doing the religion class. And they're like, they'd come in and go, listen, memorize the books of the Bible. And then they'd go ahead and memorize the books of the Bible. Then they'd leave and they'd go to the teacher's lounge and smoke. And then other times they would just wheel in the VCR and the TV. All right, we're going to watch Jesus of Nazareth. That's your religion class. We're going to watch Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus of Nazareth was a miniseries, so it would last like 3 weeks. You know, 3 weeks or a month. So they would get out of religion class. But because, you know, the class was only 40 minutes long or half an hour long or something like that. So they. But I remember we watched Godspell 900 times in religion class at Luther North. Here's your lesson today. Enjoy Godspell.
630. Holy cow, please do Godspell.
Me and Lou and Godspell.
Oh, boy.
You should see the movie, man.
Godspell?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's also, anything at this point.
You know, it's also... It's really. I mean, it's a really dumb movie. It's really corny as hell. But for some reason, I don't know. I mean, because I saw it in religion class in high school like 45 times. You know, with Jesus of Nazareth. What was the other ones that they would show? They would just pop in like a religious movie. It's like, there you go. Memorize the books of the Bible and watch Godspell. There you go. Enjoy your diploma. Here's some showtime. All right. We have more hated companies from America. 312-981-7200. It's the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4. It is Friday. All the regular Friday features will begin after 3 o'clock. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're going to talk about the real names of some fictional characters. And at 2:30 every morning on the show, we like to give you a little stand-up comedy. So we got some classic stand-up comedy, all from The Tonight Show. Eddie Murphy is going to be featured this morning. It's his first appearance on the Tonight Show ever, and it was January 1st, 1982, which actually eventually became a really big year for him, because that's the year that 48 Hours came out. So about, I guess, like 8 months after his appearance, 8 or 9 months after his appearance on Johnny Carson's show, 48 Hours came out and basically changed his career. So we'll hear some of the actual set that he does with his first appearance on The Tonight Show as part of our classic stand-up comedy that we do at 2:30 every morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we'd love for you to join us, talk or text. We've been talking about some of America's most hated companies. We've got a couple more here. Wells Fargo is amongst the most hated. Wells Fargo's customer service score of 76 is tied for the worst of any of the major banks rated by the ACSI. While many banks sustained serious damage to their reputations in the years following the subprime mortgage crisis because of their involvement and complicity in the events leading up to it, Wells Fargo's PR woes continued. The bank took a serious hit to its reputation in 2016 after it came to light that the company employees had been creating fake customer accounts in order to meet quotas and inflate company revenue. The company was fined millions of dollars, and in the aftermath of the scandal, Wells Fargo CEO John Stumpf stepped down. Even after he left, however, revelations about the company's underhanded dealings continued to pile up. And in January of 2020, a report by the Office of Comptroller of the Currency, a federal banking regulator, issued new damning charges against Stumpf and the bank, with documents and testimony that workers were effectively coerced by the bank's management to break the law. Stumpf agreed to pay a $17.5 million fine and was permanently banned from working in banking. A number of other Wells Fargo's executives face charges from the OCC. Next most hated company, Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson has no more tears. For years, Johnson & Johnson had faced accusations from customers that its talcum product, such as baby powder, had caused their cancer. It is facing roughly 17,000 lawsuits related to the issue, including one by the state of New Mexico. In July 2018, a jury awarded $4.6 billion to 22 women who claimed J&J talcum powder gave them ovarian cancer, further damaging the company's reputation. Was a 2018 Reuters report that claimed that the over 130-year-old healthcare company knew for more than 40 years that its baby powder contained asbestos, which was known for causing cancer. The company called the article false and inflammatory. Still, in October 2019, the company issued a nationwide recall of baby powder after finding asbestos in the product. Though it claims the product is now safe, J&J's reputation is in tatters. Received an F rating from the Better Business Bureau due to government action taken against the company, as well as a number of unaddressed complaints. And then finally, Juul. Not where we shop and get our groceries. Juul, J-U-U-L. After years of declining tobacco use among teenagers, American high school students are picking up the habit again. E-cigarette use has more than doubled the among high schoolers from 2017 to 2019. Many have blamed e-cigarette maker Juul and its small portable e-cigarettes for contributing to the rise in underage nicotine use and addiction. It's 21 now, right? They pushed up the
yeah,
age.
You have to be 21.
You got to be 21 to buy smokes now. The Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids says Juul's may have especially high doses of nicotine that can hook users. Juul Labs agreed to pay some to pull some fruity, sweet-flavored pods off of the brick-and-mortar store shelves in 2018 because they may be appealing to children. In early 2020, the Trump administration banned all fruity, dessert, or mint-flavored from cartridge-based e-cigarettes like Juul's. So there you go. Hated companies. I don't understand the vaping.
No, it's weird.
It is weird.
But it's, I mean, it's serious in terms of how many people just get hooked on it because it seems like it's not that big a deal. But as we've seen over the last year or so, it is a big deal.
It is. Yeah. I don't quite get it. And, I'm an ex-smoker. I smoked for a while. I was one of those people who only smoke when they drank, but I'm an alcoholic, so I smoked all the time.
So, there's your problem there,
that's
Chief.
That's right.
There you go.
Hey, I only smoke when I drink. Unfortunately, I drink every day, all day.
My uncles were really bad. They finally kicked the vaping because they were smokers, and then they moved to vaping.
They did? Is that an adult thing? I thought vaping was just like teenagers and people in their 20s.
Oh, my God. You should have seen the rigs that they had. Good Lord.
Seriously? Wow.
They were like these big battery-powered monsters.
Wait a minute. I don't understand.
You've never seen... So they're not like the little Juul vaping things. They're like these... They're like massive... kind of big cartridges, and they have a tube sticking out of it that suck on, and they pull massive amounts of vapor.
I've witnessed people vaping, and an enormous amount of smoke comes out of there, like it's just billowing out.
Yeah, these are like men in their 40s.
No,
yeah,
mm-hmm. I thought vaping was like a kid thing.
No, no. Well, it started out as the whole e-cigarette thing. Oh, it's a... You know, you got Stephen Dorff on your TV.
Stephen Dorff.
Hey, man. I know you don't really remember who I am, famous.
He's on a show called Deputy.
Thanks to the fact he got cast in True Detective, probably.
He's on a show called Deputy. But the reason to watch that show is Bex Taylor Klaus is on it. Do you know who Bex Taylor Klaus is?
I think so.
Did you ever watch The Killing? The show, The Killing? She played Bullet in the first season of The Killing.
Yeah.
She's one of my favorite humans on the planet, and I love her. And she's the reason to watch Deputy. She's a really interesting young girl. I had her on the show when she was, she's got to be, what is she, like 20 now? 20, 21 or something like that?
At least.
She was just a kid when she was on The Killing, and I saw two episodes of the show, and I was like, we have to get this girl on the show. And I interviewed her, and she was lovely. And I she's gone on to do a whole bunch of other stuff. She's been in a few movies. She was on the TV series Scream on MTV. And she's enormously talented. Like, I mean, just extraordinary. And her performance and the character that she played on The Killing when she played Bullet was just was amazing. So, yeah, she's great. So, bro, Steven Dorff. I have a buddy of mine named Mike. Mike View was in Public Enemies or Public Public Enemies, Public Enemy or Public Enemies, the Dillinger movie with Depp that Michael Mann made. And my friend Mike is in the movie. A lot of his stuff got cut. Like there was a whole subplot that involved him. That they shot. He was on set for 4 months. He shot that movie. They shot it here. And he was on set for 4 months. He's in the movie for 20 minutes, maybe, at the most. He's got 20 minutes of footage. But they had a whole subplot. They cut him out of it. But he said Johnny Depp was one of the nicest guys he's ever worked with, ever. Incredibly generous. Would take everybody out for food and drinks and stuff like that and pay for everything. He left like a $1,000 tip at a bar that they all hung out at. But anyway, he said that all the guys that he worked with on that shoot were great, except for Steven Dorff. I don't know why I don't find that hard to believe. But he said Steven Dorff was the biggest diva and I'm including Johnny Depp, who's like one of the biggest movie stars in the world. And who else was in that movie? I mean, there was a ton of people in Public Enemies.
Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce was in it. It had a ton of people who could all be legitimate, you know, divas.
Christian Bale.
That's right. Christian Bale was in it. Mike didn't have any scenes with Christian Bale. He was very upset about that.
I'm sorry. Guy Pearce wasn't in it. It was Christian Bale.
It's Christian Bale, Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Wasn't a very good movie, though.
I like it.
You do?
I do. Yeah, I have it. I like Public Enemies.
Yeah. Well, you know, my buddy Mike, if you watch it again, my buddy Mike is the idiot that screws up the prison break by punching the guard.
Yeah.
That's my buddy Mike.
You tell Mike. You just blew it.
He's the one who gets
for everybody.
Johnny Depp throws him out of the moving car.
Yeah.
The moving car. That's my buddy Mike.
Jeez.
Yeah, but he was like the only person on the set that was kind of a pain in the neck. Dorff.
Because he's like, where's my vape?
I don't know, man. But that doesn't surprise you. Hey, you ever see the movie The Gate? Horror movie?
Yeah.
That's little Steven Dorff.
Oh, my God.
That's little child actor Steven Dorff in The Gate. Go back and watch The Gate. Little D-bag Steven Dorff. All right. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're going to talk about real names of fictional characters, 312-981-7200. Got some comedy coming up at 2:30 with Eddie Murphy's first visit to The Tonight Show.
All the leaves are brown and the sky is gray. I went for a walk on a winter's day. I'd be safe and warm if I was any late. Oh, California dreaming on such a winter's day. I stopped along the way. Well, I got down on my bended knees, and I began to pray. You know the preacher digs a call.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio. I'm your overnight dude, every weekday morning from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place to the TV side of WGN and get that hour of early morning news from that team. And then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt has your morning drive. The news is next, also from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. So, you aware that some of these fictional characters that we see every day, that we've known for years, actually have names? And some of them are just weird. And many of them I didn't know. From the familiar faces that grace your morning cereal boxes to those recurring television characters whose full names we never seem to learn, the world is full of fictional characters whose visages are all too familiar, but whose names might be less well known. You've known many of these beloved characters for years, but how well do you really know them? So Captain Crunch, you know, he's got a name. Were you familiar with Captain Crunch's real name? No?
No, I was not.
His real name is Horatio Magellan Crunch. That's his full name. Horatio Magellan Crunch. Does anybody know these, you know, these iconic characters that we know from every facet, if you know, like, their real names? 312-981-7200, if you want to jump in, talk or text, 312-981-7200. The friendly captain of the SS Guppy. Did you know he was the captain of the SS Guppy?
I did know that, yeah.
Who was invented by J. Ward Productions in the early 1960s, became the face of the cereal in 63, is Horatio Magellan Crunch to his friends. Does he look like a Horatio? So did you know that the Pillsbury Doughboy has a name? He's got a real name. And it's Poppin' Fresh. Now, Poppin' Fresh has been associated with the Pillsbury products for years. They call it Poppin' Fresh. Invented by copywriter Rudy Purz in 1965, the Pillsbury Doughboy also goes by the name Poppin' Fresh, a nod to the product's quality and freshness, quote-unquote, according to Pillsbury. Mr. Fresh has a wife. Oh! Named Poppy Fresh. And they're the... They're the parents of two kids, Popper and Bun Bun. And the family cat and dog are named Biscuit and Flapjack. So you've got Poppin' Fresh, Poppy Fresh, Popper Fresh, Bun Bun Fresh, and their pets Biscuit and Flapjack. The Pillsbury people must have been blowing a lot of weed when they came up with this storyline. Biscuit and Flapjack are the cat and dog.
Another fun fact about Mr. Horatio Crunch, Captain Horatio Crunch.
Horatio Magellan Crunch.
Is that apparently Captain Crunch has a perfect 200 IQ.
Where are you getting this information from?
This is coming to us from Crunch Facts.
Wait a minute. Is it a website about Captain Crunch? A whole website?
It's an entire website chronicling Captain Crunch.
Get out of here. By the way, it's Cap'n.
Cap'n.
Cap'n Crunch. Yeah. Well, there's a whole website chronicling the world of Captain Crunch.
Yep.
Man, why am I surprised? The internet is just... The internet is a weird thing.
Apparently, here's his chess record. Crunch is infamously good at chess with a staggering win-loss record of 369 wins and 7 losses.
Who does he play?
Probably, what's his name? Jean Lafitte?
Does he play the tricks bird? What's the bird on the tricks?
No, the tricks is a rabbit.
Oh, tricks is a rabbit. What's the bird? Crazy Bird.
Oh yeah, that's Sunny, isn't it?
What's the cereal? Like
Cocoa Puffs.
Oh, Cocoa Puffs, right?
Yeah,
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, right?
Yeah,
it's a cuckoo,
his name
it's
is
a
Sunny.
Cuckoo bird.
Sunny. Yeah.
Is it Sunny?
Yeah.
What's the rabbit's name on Trix?
Oh boy,
Does he have a name? Does the Trix Rabbit have a name? Because he's silly because he thinks tricks are for him, but they're not. They're for kids. And he's never going to learn that lesson. It's only been about 50 years that he's been trying to get the tricks, and the silly rabbit tricks are for kids, you idiot.
I think he's just the Trix Rabbit.
Oh, that's too bad. All right, how about this?
His name is Trix, T-R-I-C-K-S.
Oh, it's not with an X.
Yeah.
Okay.
T-R-I-C-K-S.
All right, well, no wonder he wants it. It's his.
Give me the damn cereal.
So the Quaker Oats guy, you ready for this? The Quaker Oats guy? His name is Larry.
Just Larry?
just Larry.
Oh, my God.
The Quaker Oats guy is Larry. Come on. That's not William Penn or Ben Franklin smirking at you from your container of oatmeal.
William Penn.
As many people seem to believe, the good people at Quaker Oats refer to him as Larry. In 2012, Larry got a mini makeover in the form of a logo refresh. His hair was trimmed, he lost a little weight, and according to Quaker, has acquired, quote, more radiant skin from daily oatmeal masks. That's Larry. Larry the Quaker.
I used to have Quaker Oats every morning for breakfast.
You know, Quaker Oats is a Chicago thing.
Yeah.
I was just talking to my parents the other night about how we went on a tour of the Quaker Oats facilities in Merchandise Mart. I don't know if they're still in Merchandise Mart, but that's when we went.
Did you ever get the Quaker Oats with the dinosaur eggs?
No.
It was they must have just done this in the 90s or in 2000s, where you get Quaker Oats with dinosaur eggs, and they would, like, you know, they'd have the eggs, and you'd heat up, and the eggs would melt, and then they'd have, like, the little kind of, I don't know if they were candy or just some sort of hard marshmallow, like dinosaur shapes.
That's pretty cool.
It was super cool.
I mean, in the 90s, I was an adult, so I wasn't eating, oatmeal aimed at kids.
Maybe you should have been.
Dinosaur eggs now. Was it supposed to be like a tie-in with Jurassic Park or something?
That's a very good question. I do not know.
Yeah, but you were eating it when you were a kid, right? Jurassic Park came out before you were born, right?
The first one did.
Yeah.
Second one did. I remember I got a The Lost World disposable camera and a box of Cheerios.
Wait.
And it came with a picture of Julianne Moore.
Ooh.
And, like, talking to it, like taking a photo of a dinosaur. And for the longest time, I was like, this is proof that dinosaurs are real. Because that's a real lady. And she's looking at a real dinosaur. And my mom, I could not be convinced.
Right.
I was like, dinosaurs are real. Look at this. Look at this photograph of a lady talking to a dinosaur.
So this was in a box of cereal?
Yeah, box of Cheerios.
Box of Cheerios.
Yeah, you got a free disposable camera.
So the Cheerios people are responsible. I believe that would be General Mills are responsible for stunting your intelligence as
there's
a child.
There's a lot of things responsible for stunting my intelligence. I'll tell you that.
Hey, listen though, if it comes with a picture of Julianne Moore, that's always good. I prefer the second one to the first one. The first Jurassic Park.
Bold, but I'll stand by it.
I prefer the second one, but my favorite is the last one. The Jurassic World that turns into a stalker movie at the end. Okay. All right. News is up next.
Gee, but it's great to be back home. Home is where I want to be. I've been on the road so long, my friend. And if you came along, I know you couldn't disagree. It's the same old story. Your bags and flee. You're in trouble, boy, and now you're heading into war.
Nick DiGilio show continues here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock on this Friday morning. And after 3, the regular Friday features will start. We've got You Big Dummy. That's where we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom votes, I vote, and then you, first person through at 312-981-7200 votes. We've got Straight Outta Context. That's where you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds kind of dirty and it makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And then we play them back every Friday morning. And Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen 24/7. Whenever anybody at any time mentions me, we want to know about it, and you're a spy. Jot it all down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We play those back. And then, of course, it's Fly Jams Friday, with DJ Luscious Hushes playing all the funky stuff. And if you got a request for Fly Jams Friday, that's R&B or soul or anything funky or anything fly, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 2:30, we've got some classic stand-up, which we do every morning at 2:30 now. And we're going to have Eddie Murphy's very first appearance on The Tonight Show back in 1982, and we'll hear that set too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talking texts. And we're talking about real names of fictional characters. And we've got some texts here. 779 says, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo's full name is Shaggy Rogers. I didn't know that. 312, greetings. Mr. Clean's first name is Veritably. That's from Brian.
That is true.
He says, I love that. Veritably Clean. All right. You remember the commercial from like a couple of years ago or last year where he was sexy Mr. Clean? He was like sexy Mr. Clean, and the woman whose kitchen he was in, she was like fawning over him. And she wasn't animated. She was like a regular human woman fawning over how sexy Mr. Veritably Clean was. 708, my favorites are Sarge from Beetle Bailey. His real name, I believe, is Orville Snorkel. Orville Snorkel? That's the Sarge from Beetle Bailey? His name is Orville Snorkel? Terry also says that isn't the skipper from Gilligan's Island Jonas Quimby? I don't know. Skipper from Gilligan's Island, Jonas Quimby.
Jonas Grumby.
Jonas Grumby?
Yes.
Quimby is on The Simpsons. That's the mayor, right?
Yeah, Mayor Quimby.
Mayor Quimby, who is...
Jonas Grumby.
Jonas Grumby is the skipper from Gilligan's Island. Okay. Does Mayor Quimby have a first name? Yeah, he does, right? On The Simpsons?
Yeah, well, it's because it's all a play on how he's like a Kennedy.
He's a Kennedy, yeah.
So Mayor Joseph Fitzgerald O'Malley Fitzpatrick O'Donnell the Edge Quimby, all Irish names.
They threw in the Edge.
The Edge, yeah.
That's
wow,
hilarious.
That is too much.
Okay, Mrs. Butterworth. You know what Mrs. Butterworth's name is? It's Joy. Joy Butterworth. Thanks to a marketing campaign in 2009, Mrs. Butterworth was finally given a first name. Joy. Just like the feeling you experience when you bite into a stack of warm, fluffy pancakes. Joy Butterworth. Comic Book Guy. I didn't know Comic Book Guy had a name. Did you know the Comic Book Guy had a name?
No. Well, I just knew he was like a... like a cipher for Matt Groening.
Well, yeah, it was the worst episode ever. His name is Jeff Albertson. Though an episode revealed Comic Book Guy's real name to be Jeff, Matt Groening had a different moniker in mind. In my mind, Lewis Lane was his name, and he was obsessed and tormented by Lois Lane, he told MTV in 2003. But his name is Jeff Albertson. Was not aware that Comic Book Guy even had a name, let alone that it was Jeff Albertson. Lewis Lane, though, would have been funnier. So, all right. Real names of fictional characters, 312-981-7200 if you want to join in here on 720 WGN.
book is old and faded. Sometimes hated.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. People who hear that song who are very young are like, what's an operator? Why would someone help me make a call?
Just send them a text, dummy.
Yeah. You don't need an operator. What's an operator? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here on 720 here until 4 a.m. And coming up in just a few minutes here after 2:30. We'll hear some classic stand-up, which we do now every morning at 2:30 to get you going. Eddie Murphy's first appearance on The Tonight Show. The Johnny Carson Show reruns you can check out on Antenna TV every night, and I can't recommend it more highly. There's nothing cooler than those classic Carson episodes. You can see them on Antenna TV. So we're talking about real names of fictional characters. Like, for instance, I didn't know the comic book guy's name from The Simpsons is Jeff Albertson. How about Mom from Futurama? Her name is Carol Miller, the mom from Futurama. Though Carol is basically the mommest name ever, Groening did a Reddit AMA in 2017 where he admitted that writer Patrick Verone originally called the evil CEO of MomCore Edna after his own mother. Oh, man. Okay, the Monopoly Policeman. Did you know that the Monopoly Policeman had a name?
I didn't think he needed to have a name.
Yeah, no, he's the Monopoly Policeman. He's got a name. And his name is Officer Edgard Mallory. Officer Ed, that's the one who sends you to jail. Go directly to jail. That's Officer Edgar Mallory telling you to go to jail. The next time you land on the go directly to jail spot on Monopoly, you have Officer Edgard Mallory to blame. According to Hasbro, that's the name of the cop who inhabits that space. How about the Monopoly inmate? That's Jake the Jailbird. Jake the Jailbird. You'll be getting out of jail if you roll doubles or cough up the bail money, but poor Jake the Jailbird isn't leaving anytime soon. The rich Monopoly guy. Wait a minute. It's Ace Ventura 2, right?
Man, Ace Ventura, pet detective, and you must be the Monopoly guy.
That's the second one, right? But both those movies are fantastic. They're hilarious. I've seen the first one like 9,000 times. The second one I've only seen a few times. But the first one I've seen like 9,000 times. One of my favorite scenes in the first one, besides the with the sliding door when he's on the that whole thing, which to me I can't even watch it without, you know, like peeing myself laughing. But my favorite is when he's all mad at Courtney Cox and he calls her fatty. And when they're sitting outside on the lawn chairs, and he's like, what do you feed your dog? He calls Courtney Cox fatty. Courtney Cox weighs like 86 pounds. What is it? What was that? You have more?
Thanks for the free parking.
So anyway, the rich Monopoly guy, his name is Milburn Pennybags. Milburn Pennybags. When you get that unexpected $10 windfall for coming in second place in a beauty pageant. You thank Rich Uncle Money Pennybags, who was originally named Milburn, according to former Parker Brothers executive Philip Orbanes. After Hasbro purchased Parker Brothers, they renamed him Mr. Monopoly. Orbanes also said that the dapper gentleman once had a wife named Madge Pennybags. Milburn and Madge Pennybags. Thanks for the free parking.
I can't tell you the number of times I say that to people. Be like, hey, thanks for the free parking.
I saw the first time I saw Ace Ventura, I seriously, because with watching the commercials and everything, I was like, it's a kid's movie. You know, like looking at how he was dressed and it was Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. I was like, oh, it's a kid's movie. 5 minutes in, when there's an oral sex scene, I was like, what the hell is happening? Wait a minute, this movie's for adults? What?
No, that is a movie for adults.
No, but I seriously thought it was a kid's movie based on the advertising and, you know, how he was dressed and that he's always he's talking with animals and stuff. I'm like, oh, it's a kid's movie.
I really appreciate the bit with the bat, like in the second one with Chicago.
Yeah.
Chicago, yeah. You are out of here.
Yeah. When he gets those spears thrown into his legs.
Yeah, and they just keep calling him White Devil.
Man, hilarious. And the rhino scene. I mean, that's unspeakably funny. That's Tommy Davidson, right? That he has the fight with? Isn't it Tommy Davidson? From In Living Color?
I think so.
The whole, like, spear thing and the fight that he has? I think it's Tommy Davidson. In that's the first one, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. Let's see. Guy Smiley. What? Guy Smiley has a real name. Guy Smiley from Sesame Street, who was, like, one of my favorite characters on Sesame Street. His name is Bernie Liedkerkrantz. Bernie Liedkerkrantz, if you ever thought Guy Smiley was too spot on for a name of a game show host, you're onto something, because his real name is Bernie Liedkerkrantz. All right. Peppermint Patty is Patricia Reichardt. That's her real name. Wait. From Peanuts? Her name is Patricia Reichardt? In a Peanuts comic strip from January 15th, 1972, Peppermint Patty reveals that her real name is Patricia Reichardt. That's just weird, right? Peppermint Patty. I remember when when that Peanuts movie came out like 5 years ago or something. I was like, don't, because I love Peanuts. I love Charlie Brown. It's part of my childhood. I love it. I love all the specials. Huge Peanuts fan. And when they announced that they were going to, you know, release a new Peanuts movie, I was like, man, do not ruin my childhood, because I will hurt you. I will hurt you. And I went in like on guard and like ready to punch somebody. But it was beautiful. Did you see the Peanuts movie from a few years ago?
Yeah, it was really good.
It's great. It's really great. And I thought they were going to try and modernize it, you know, cell phones and all that stuff. But it wasn't. It wasn't. And there was hockey in it and ice skating, and that always makes me happy. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. And it was so true to the Peanuts character. Charles Schulz would have been very, very happy with it. But that was one of those movies that I was dreading. You know, you walk into a movie and you're like, man, no, you know? And within 15 minutes, I was like, this is just beautiful. I was so happy. It's like one of the happiest times I've had in a movie theater ever was discovering that last Peanuts movie was just beautiful. I mean, just beautiful. But I didn't know Patricia Reichardt was her real name. Peppermint Patty.
I just always called her Sir.
Wait a minute. The muted trumpet teacher. Wah, 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 from the Peanuts. She's got a name. Did you know that?
I did not.
Mrs. Othmar. Mrs. Othmar. And that annoying teacher who sounded suspiciously like a muted trumpet, her name is Miss Othmar. She later got married and became Mrs. Hagemeyer, which poor Linus could never remember. That's a lot of backup. That's a lot of backstory right there.
Yeah. Also, very appropriately Minnesotan, because Charles Holtz is from St. Paul.
Yeah.
So he probably had a Miss Othmeyer, Miss Hagemeyer, whatever.
Yeah. No. That's
very
true.
Nordic.
Absolutely. But wait a second. Aren't all of the adults? Don't all of the adults that they encounter go womp 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 womp? They all do that. It's not just the teacher.
I think so, yeah. I think
because you don't hear the adults. It's all kids. It's all from the kids' point of view. All of the peanut stuff is from the kids' point of view.
Yeah.
So whenever there's an adult in a scene or around the kids, I think they all go brah, 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 because you don't want to hear, because it's the world of the children. Peanuts is about those kids. It's all about the children. So any adult character, not just the teacher, but any adult character, brah, 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 brah. God, I love Peanuts. I love it. I love it so much. You know, best Christmas special ever. You know what I mean? It's the best. It's and they always talk about how depressing it is, and that's one of the things I love about Peanuts, because it is depressing. It is the whole world. So, all right. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. The show continues, and when we come back, I'll tell you all about this Eddie Murphy comedy that we are about to hear on 720 WGN.
The wind blew some luck in my direction. Caught it in my hands today. I finally made a tricky French connection. You winked and gave me your okay. I'll take you on a trip beside the ocean and drop the top at Chesapeake Bay. Ain't nothing like the sky to dose a potion. The moon will send you on your way. Feels right. Moonlight.
Yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here on a Friday morning. The regular Friday features are coming up after 3 o'clock. It starts out with You Big Dummy, and then we got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then things get funky with Fly Jams Friday. If you have requests for Luscious Hushes, for some Fly Jams and some R&B and some funky stuff, 312-981-7200. Get them in now, 312-981-7200. All right, so at 2:30 every morning now, we're going to give you some comedy. And it'll showcase great comedians from the past and great comedians who have appeared on Johnny Carson's show, on The Tonight Show. By the way, you can see the Johnny Carson show every night on Antenna TV, and it's must-watch TV. It's just fantastic, classic stuff. So this morning, we are featuring Eddie Murphy, and Eddie Murphy's very first appearance doing stand-up on Johnny Carson's show. This is from January 1st of 1982, right before, he was on SNL at that point, and he was big on SNL, but it's right before his career took off, because that same year, 48 Hours came out, and then that was it. So let's hear Eddie Murphy's first set on The Tonight Show from 1982.
Thank you. Shut up. I've been in, this is nice, California. I've been out in here for about 3 days. If anybody see me walking around, I have to explain. I had the same suit on for 3 days because I like this suit. I bought it from the catalog, and I enjoy it. You ever see those guys modeling clothes in catalog? Ever see those guys doing the same thing in their suit? Every time I put on a suit, I got to go like this. I was just outside, standing in the front, going. You know? Anybody ever see those guys that model their underwear in these books? And they smile while they're doing it. They stand out there going. Did you notice these guys never have no bulge? You ever check that out? And they're standing there in front of millions of people, smiling. First of all, if I didn't have no bulge, I would not be modeling no underwear. And second of all, I damn sure wouldn't be smiling. I might be modeling like this. You know, Johnny said something about buckwheat a little earlier. He's talking about buckwheat. And I did buckwheat on my show, right? And the name buckwheat, I started thinking, right? I'm from a predominantly black family. And I have yet to run into a relative named Buckwheat at a cookout, you know? You can't just walk off the streets and walk up to somebody and say, hey, how you doing? My name's Tom. What's yours? Oh, my name's Buckwheat, man. Nice to meet you. Yeah, Buckwheat. That's my name. No, I'm serious. Buck, I ain't got no last name. Buckwheat. That's it. I'm serious. You don't believe me? Ain't that right, Stymie? Yeah, this is my brother Stymie over here. And don't leave watching me my other brother. Hold on. Farina! Yeah, Buckwheat's and Farina. You know how most people name after their father? Me and Farina was named after our father's favorite breakfast. Buckwheat's and Farina. My mama named all the kids after cereal, man. That's my little sister over there. Her name's Shredded Wheat. Yeah. And those are my twin brothers over there, Quisp and Quake, right there. And that's my littlest brother right there. He's a little slower than everybody else. His name is Special K. That there, that's my big sister. She a prostitute. Her name is Trix. Stand next to her is my big brother. He's homosexual. His name is Lucky Charms. You might know. I'm gonna quit show business. Making my announcement. I'm gonna become a Secret Service man. It's the truth. Because they have no black Secret Service men, and we would make better Secret Service men than white people, truthfully. Because we're more menacing. We are. See, we have a different rhythm to us. We see somebody that looks suspicious, we just walk over to the guy and say, excuse me, man, you crowd Mr. President. Then I'm going to run for president, because we haven't had any black presidents lately either, have we? Somebody black should run. It'd be different. There's nothing to lose. It'd be fun, man. It can't get no worse than it's been the past 100 years. I figured, why not take the risk? Everybody's afraid to run, though, because they know that even though it's 1982, it's still a risky business to be the first black president. You know, you have to give speeches like this. My fellow Americans, as the president, I feel we the people must get together and join hands. Are you watching these people over here? He won't stand still. The black dude in the back going, hey, that ain't funny. I'm kidding, I'm not gonna quit the business. I'm having fun. I bought a new car recently. I ain't gonna say what kind of car it is, but in 82 the cars talk. Did you know that anybody get a new car recently? The cars speak to you. If you leave your lights on, the car will say, ding! Lights are on. And that's bad, man. I leave my lights on purpose when I take a girl out. I get out of the car, I say, lights are on. The girl says, did your car say something? I say, yeah, it did. But I bought my car from like a black dealer, so it got a different rhythm to it. You leave your lights on, the car say, hey, man, you left your lights on. I said, the lights is on, man. Damn, what, you blind and deaf? That basically is the only thing that changed. I still live in the same neighborhood with the new car, and it's kind of tough, man. The other day I got inside the car and put the key in to start it up, and the car said, say, man, somebody stole your battery.
You got a lot of fun.
Yeah, so he was 21. He was 21 when he did that set. Well, you know what? Sorry, he was 20. He turned 21 that year, but in April. That was January. So, you know, I mean, he started doing stand-up when he was like 16. And he got Saturday Night Live when he was 18. He started on Saturday Night Live. And that's quite a successful first set. So let's see. 773 says, right before Eddie Murphy said it, yelled out, "I ain't got no bulge," which was super awkward at 7-Eleven. Thank you for me and the 7-Eleven counter guy. So at 7-Eleven, we caused the "I ain't got no bulge." Oh, man. All right. I'm glad I can provide entertainment for people who are in the 7-Eleven at 2:30 in the morning. So it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up after 3 o'clock, all of our regular features will start with you, Big Dummy, and continue through. And right now we're getting back to the conversation we've been having about real names of fictional characters. Like, for instance, we talked about Mr. Clean. Veritably Clean is his first name. How about this one? Barbie. You know what Barbie's real name is? Full name? Barbara Millicent Roberts. That says, with a mouth full of a name like Barbara Millicent Roberts, you can see why the perpetually popular doll is better known as Barbie. She was named after the daughter of co-creators Ruth and Elliot Handler. Barbara Millicent Roberts is Barbie's real name. How about Ken? Ken's name? Ken Carson. That's not as much fun as Barbara Millicent Roberts. Barbie's longtime love and fellow fashionista is named Ken Carson, also after the Handler's offspring. The real-life Barbie and Ken didn't appreciate the attention that came with being the doll's namesakes. Yeah, that must have been something right there, to be Barbie and Ken. In fact, Barbara Handler Siegel's daughter Cheryl never owned a Barbie. Ken Handler has said that Barbie, quote, should take more care about going to the beach. I wish we could work in, she should work in a soup kitchen. And then, but then she would never sell. She worked in a soup kitchen. Barbie works in a soup kitchen. All right. More real names of fictional characters here. 312-981-7200 if you want to join us on 720 WGN. The Nick DiGilio Show continues.
Shines her light on the city nights. And I got a kitchen noon train. I gotta be there on time. Oh, it feels so good to know she waits at the end of the line. Sweet, sweet city woman. I see your face, I can hear your voice, I can almost touch you.
All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. The Friday morning, coming up after 3 o'clock, all of our Friday features will begin with You, Big Dummy. Then we got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then it gets fly and funky, Fly Jams Friday. You got some R&B requests you want to jump in here with, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Oh, so we've been talking about some fictional characters that actually have real names. Like, for instance, Barbie, Barbara Millicent Roberts. Oh, I knew this one, the Operation Patient, you know, on the show, the game Operation. You know the game Operation?
Yeah.
Do you know the name of the patient?
No.
It's Cavity Sam.
Ah.
That's his name. Cavity Sam. The church lady. Did you know that the church lady, Dana Carvey's character, has a name? Enid Strict. Dana Carvey's judgmental, lip-pursing, holier-than-thou church lady has a name, which she occasionally referenced on church chat. It's Enid Strict. Enid Strict. That seems right. Cookie Monster. Did you know the Cookie Monster actually has a name? His name is Sid. During a 2004 episode of Sesame Street, Cookie Monster admitted that before he became hooked on baked goods, his name he was known as Sid. In 2010, he tweeted, "May have been Sydney." So Cookie Monster is Sid. Think about that the next time you see the Cookie Monster. Take it easy on those cookies, Sid.
Yeah. Maybe he should write a memoir.
Yeah.
A Million Little Crumbs.
Man with a Yellow Hat, he's got a real name. Did you know the man with the yellow hat has a real name? Ted Shackelford. Ted Shackelford. In a deleted scene from the 2006 Curious George movie, it was revealed that the man with the yellow hat is named Ted Shackelford. It may not count since it was a deleted scene, but we thought you should just know. Fun fact, Ted Shackelford is also the actor who played Gary Ewing on Knott's Landing. Ted Shackelford. The Bic Pen logo. What? The Bic Pen logo has a name. His name is Bic Boy. Bic Boy.
Bic was based here at one point, or are they still based here?
Are they?
I think so. My mom worked for Bic.
She did?
Yeah, when she was, she was like a teen. It was like a random office job grabbing coffee.
For Bic people? For the Bic Boy? Did she have to get coffee for Bic Boy?
Yeah, it was terrifying, too, because he's just this giant, round head.
The little guy on the Bic logo hasn't been impaled by a pen. He's holding it behind his back. And he has a name, and it's Bic Boy. I can't see. What does the logo look like? I'm going to have to remind myself. I'm going to Google Bic logo. Because I can't remember what it looks like. Hold on a minute. Here we go. So it looks like a pen is a...
Yeah, and his head is like a ballpoint.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, and he's wearing a little like schoolboy outfit.
Yeah. He's got like... Yeah, it does look like he's been stabbed with the pen. Doesn't it look like the pen has gone right through his whole body? That's Bic Boy. So... His head's supposed to be a ballpoint? That's what his head's supposed to be?
I think so, yeah. It's supposed to be the ballpoint.
Okay. He does look like he's been impaled by the pen, though. I will say that. Bic Boy. A lot of imagination used when they named that guy. all right, what's next here? Twitter. You know the Twitter logo? It's got a name.
Tweedle.
Larry Bird.
Come on now.
It says, the friendly blue bird over on Twitter goes by the name of Larry. Larry Bird. What did you say it was?
Tweedle.
Is that what they call him?
No. I just.
Oh, you were just making it up. No, it's Larry Bird. It's
Larry Bird.
Larry Bird is the Twitter logo. Okay, Mr. Peanut. Well, he's dead.
Well, now we've got...
Baby Peanut.
Baby Nut.
Baby Nut. Well, Mr. Peanut's name... Bartholomew Richard Fitzgerald Smythe. That explains the monocle. Bartholomew Richard Fitzgerald Smythe. In 1916, 14-year-old Antonio Gentile entered a Planters Peanuts contest to create a mascot. His winning entry was a version of the dapper legume we all know and love today. He also suggested a name for his character. And that would be Bartholomew Richard Fitzgerald Smythe. The Michelin Man. Bibendum is his name. The Michelin Man's real name, Bibbendum, comes from an early advertisement that showed the Michelin Man holding a questionable cocktail of nails and broken glass and saying the tagline was Michigan tires drink up, Michelin tires drink up obstacles. Oh, my God. the evil queen in Snow White. Well, it's Grimhilda. We knew that. That's not a... Is that... Was that supposed to be... Should we not have known that? I knew that. Jughead. His name is Forsyth P. Jones the Third. You didn't think Jughead's parents actually named him Jughead, did you? Actually, what they named him isn't really less bizarre because his name is Forsyth P. Jones the Third.
Everyone's second favorite hamburger-loving cartoon character.
And the first would be Wimpy?
Yeah, Wimpy.
Yeah.
You should ask Dave Schwann about Wimpy sometime.
Why?
He just seems to have an affinity for Wimpy.
Really?
Yeah, he used to just say that, like, I'll pay you gladly for... Oh. What's the
Tuesday.
Quote?
I'll pay you gladly for a hamburger now. On Tuesday or something like that.
Yeah.
I'll pay gladly on Tuesday for a hamburger now.
Yeah. He always used to say that. I was like, why is he like Wimpy so much?
You know, they used to have a chain of burger places called Wimpy's. And if I'm not mistaken, they did sliders. So it was like a, you know, obviously a variation on the White Castle. But they were Wimpy's. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe it was a full-size burger. But I thought it was like a slider. But they were called Wimpy's. That was run right by Wrigley Field. There was one right down the street from Wrigley Field. It was a Wimpy's. All right, Moose. Marmaduke Mason. There's a reason that that Lughead Moose chose a short nickname because his real name is Marmaduke Mason. Mr. Whipple. You know what Mr. Whipple's first name is? You know who Mr. Whipple is, right?
Yes.
Don't squeeze the Charmin?
Yeah, yeah.
That guy? And then, like, when he would stop people from squeezing the Charmin, then he would squeeze the Charmin because he was a jerk. George is his first name. Mr. Whipple, the poor grocer who so desperately wanted his customers to leave the Charmin alone, went by the name of George. George Whipple. What about Woody from Toy Story? I guess he's got a full name. Woody Pride. According to Toy Story 3 director Lee Unkirk, Woody from Toy Story has a last name, and it's Pride. Woody Pride. I didn't know that Woody had a last name. Casper the Friendly Ghost. His name is Casper McFadden. You know, Casper the Friendly Ghost, he's like a child, right?
Yeah, he's a dead child.
Yeah, do you ever wonder how he died?
I prefer not to ask.
How did this kid die? How did poor Casper die? He's just a kid. Poor Casper McFadden.
Probably the black lung from working in the mines.
Though the comic books never specified Casper's first name, nor addressed if or how he died, the 1995 Casper movie claimed that the little ghost's name was McFadden. Oh, so the Christina Ricci movie. Jeffrey, the Toys R Us mascot, is Dr. G. Raff. See, G. Raff. Get it? Because he's a giraffe. Before he was simply known as Jeffrey, the Toys R Us mascot was known as Dr. G. Raff. Shaggy. Norville Rogers. Though Shaggy fits him better, the frightened ghost hunter's real name is actually Norville Rogers. I didn't know that. Shaggy was Norville Rogers. How about Scooby-Doo? His full name is Scoobert. Scoobert Doo. MacGyver. Did you know MacGyver's first name? Angus. Angus MacGyver. B.A. Baracus, Mr. T. Bosco Albert Baracus. Turtle from Entourage. You know Turtle's name from Entourage?
Nah.
Salvatore Asante. Wilson from Home Improvement, the guy with no face. Wilson W. Wilson Jr.
That guy, Heidi Ho there, Tim.
Yeah, it's the guy
who's neighbor.
Always behind the fence. You never see his face. Bull Shannon from Night Court. Nostradamus Shannon. What's this? This is his name. Boomhauer from King of the Hill. I don't know what they say. It's Jeffrey Dexter Boomhauer III. That's his full name. Skipper from Gilligan's Island, Jonas Grumby. And the professor from Gilligan's Island, Roy Hinckley. So, there you go. All right. The news is coming up after we break here.
Here's the dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did? Oh, no. You big dummy. You dummy.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN as we begin our Friday of features. First up, you big dummy. This is where we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who's the biggest dummy of the week. Dummy number one, dummy number one, dummy number one. A man who tried to steal goats from a farmer in Stafford County, Virginia, pretended to be intoxicated and gave deputies a false name. The farmer told deputies his wife had gone out to check on their goats Friday night and saw that they were let out of their pen, according to the Stafford County Sheriff's Office. She suspected there was someone hiding in their field. Her husband then found the suspect, 19-year-old Cole Schrock, and held him at gunpoint until deputies arrived, the sheriff's office said. When deputies came to the farm on the 700 block of Leland Road, the farmer told them he thought the suspect was intoxicated trying to steal his goats. Deputies said Schrock was slurring his words and initially gave them a false name. The suspect later admitted to pretending to be intoxicated, which deputies confirmed with a breath test. Deputies found three goats tied up in the suspect's nearby pickup truck. At one point, the farmer realized the suspect had recently bought a few goats from him. He said he hadn't recognized Schrock at first because of the hood covering his face. Schrock was arrested and charged with larceny of animals, identity theft, and to avoid arrest, and unlawful entry with intent to commit larceny.
La-dee-dee, they la-dee-dum is dummy. Just Donna and me. And the dummy makes three.
Dummy number two, dummy number two, dummy number two. A Syracuse man who allegedly told police he was setting fires inside a vacant house so he could take pictures has been charged with arson. Thomas Fox Shea, 48, was charged Tuesday in Summit County's 3rd District Court with aggravated arson, a first-degree felony. On Friday, firefighters were dispatched to a report of a house fire at 3075 East State Route 35 in Woodland. Shea received burns to his face and hands in the fire and was treated at a local hospital. After he was released from the hospital and after initially denying he had anything to do with it, Shea admitted that, quote, he intentionally started the fire so that he could photograph it, according to charging documents. Shea said he entered the house knowing it was vacant and started three fires using a container filled with gas, the charges state. He also brought a fire extinguisher and photography equipment with him. Shea stated he mounted his cell phone on a tripod to video him lighting the fires. Shea said he lit two fires in the residence and put the fires out with the fire extinguisher. Shea said he lit the third fire in the residence and the fire got out of control, according to the police affidavit.
Have you ever seen him act?
I've been watching him act all his life. Like a dummy.
I mean, I didn't know you were interested in gardening.
Why not?
Well, up to now, the only thing you've grown is dumber and dumber.
Dummy number three, dummy number three, dummy number three. Former Papa John's CEO John Schnatter tried to clarify his wild statement that implied that he ate more than a whole pie a day for a month, criticizing the pizza giant he once controlled. Back in November, Schnatter told WDRB, affiliate in Louisville, Kentucky, that he, quote, had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days and concluded that Papa John's is not the same pizza since his ouster. But this week, on the H3 podcast, Shatner said the verb had wasn't as same as eaten. I didn't say I'd eaten 40 pizzas in 30 days. I said I had 40 pizzas in 30 days. What? That's when host Ethan Klein pushed back, accusing Shatner of playing fast and loose with his pizza lingo. Hold on. Are we going to split hairs here? When I said I had pizza, that means I ate it, Klein said. He pulled out a picture of a pizza and said, had usually means inspecting a pie, not just part of eating it. When I had a pizza, it means I'm inspecting. I'm not eating every pizza. I may be eating parts of pizzas. He said that he now eats 8 or 9 slices a week, and that he used to be down from 12 to 15 slices when he was actually running Papa John's. He stepped down as CEO and left the board following reports that he uttered a racial slur during a conference call. He said his former company has failed in keeping up with the longtime slogan, better ingredients, better pizza. He vowed in his November interview that he would see a day of reckoning with the board members who forced him out and they would have to pay.
The only reason I call you a dummy is because I call them as I see them. My only child is a dummy.
All right. We'll finish up. You big dummy, as it continues here on the Friday features on WGN on the Nick DiGiglio show. That's right. You big dummy continues. You big dummy. Nick DiGiglio show here on 720 WGN for a Friday morning. Get back to it. Dummy number four. Dummy number four. Dummy number four. A Stark County woman was arrested Thursday for repeatedly calling 911 to tell police her parents shut off her cell phone, according to court documents. Saloni Ketterpaul, 36, of Jackson Township, was charged with disrupting public services, a fourth-degree felony. On February 13th, she called 911 and demanded police respond to her home because her parents had shut off her cell phone. The first time she called, police warned her that the only call is for legitimate emergencies. Hours later, she called again about her parents shutting off her phone. According to court documents, she was belligerent, and she thought it was a legitimate issue.
Yeah, I'm worthless, penniless, broke, busted, and
a dummy.
And I can't wait to see you starring in your first movie.
Yeah.
Deep Dummy.
Dummy number five, dummy number five, dummy number five. Several employees have been fired over a viral video that shows a man bathing in a Wendy's restaurant sink. Oh, man. The video has been making its rounds on social media. It shows a shirtless man inside the restaurant's kitchen. Employees can also be heard laughing while another person in uniform throws something into the sink and yells, "Wash yourself!" In the video, the shirtless man is seen scrubbing himself and saying, "It feels like a hot tub." Since the video was uploaded, it's been viewed thousands of times, and now Many people are calling for employees to be held accountable. I mean, I don't wish anything bad on anyone, but for sure, get fired, one customer said.
I'm not kidding you. You're a big dummy. You bigger dummy than my dummy.
All right. Let's do a recap here, shall we? And then we vote on the dummy of the week. We got the guy who pretended to be drunk, gave a false name when he was trying to steal goats from a farmer. We got the dummy who set a house on fire so he could take photos of it. We got the dummy who was the founder of Papa John's who said he didn't eat 40 pizzas in 30 days. He had 40 pizzas in 30 days. We have the woman who called 911 repeatedly because her parents shut off the cell phone. And we have the Wendy's employees who were fired after a guy was in the restaurant sink taking a bath and saying it feels like a hot tub. Now, I worked at McDonald's for many years, and they have the big deep sinks in the back where we would clean all the trays, all the metal stuff, and all that stuff. And we used to call it dives. If you were in the back cleaning in the sink, that was called dives. So I don't know if that guy took it literally. So all right, Tom, what do you think? Who's the dumbest, fairest dummy of them all?
I'm going to go with the guy bathing in the Wendy's sink.
Yeah.
And getting filmed and doing it.
And the employee who threw something at him and said, "Wash yourself."
It feels like a hot tub.
Speaking of Eddie Murphy, hot tub. The guy trying to steal the goats is pretty ridiculous. Why did he pretend he was drunk?
Maybe he thought he could get away with it.
But he was
like, "Sorry, man, I'm super drunk."
Well, he's going to get, I mean, you know, his truck is there. So you're going to pretend to be drunk even though you just got out of your truck? I don't know. A guy setting a house on fire to take pictures of it? Unbelievably stupid. We all know the Papa John's founder is a jackass. That we knew that before we even had that. The repeatedly calling 911 is stupid. But I have to agree with you. The whole it feels like a hot tub thing. 312-981-7200 if you want to be a third vote to make it unanimous, because we always want to have a vote from you. 312-981-7200. Phone lines are open right now, so call right now and you can be our third vote. But I'm going with the Wendy's employee. And having worked at the McDonald's in the back room, those are deep sinks. You can get in there. Now, you've never worked at a fast food...
No, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I worked at Cheesy's.
Oh, Cheesy's,
which
right.
is same principles as a fast food kitchen.
Right.
You know, we had the big grill and the giant sinks
yeah.
to do all the dishes in.
Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to vote. Or maybe you don't.
Maybe you're just too disturbed by it all.
It might be too disturbing for you. But we got a winner anyway. So even if we don't get another vote, it is the idiot who was bathing in a Wendy's sink saying it feels like a hot tub. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. All right, let's move on and try this out. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F bomb. Oh, as I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context. Context, context.
What's up? Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context, 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 context. All right, straight out of context. Another one of our Friday features. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old, you jot down the day, the time, who said it. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. nickdshow@gmail.com. And we play them back every Friday. All right, Tom, shall we begin?
Well, it's only appropriate that my first day back this week after being sick, I'm the first one up.
Oh.
Straight out of context.
Okay.
Got caught here by Mary. Firmly grasp the beef stick with both hands. That damn Valentine's Day.
That was when we were testing out our the lovely Deanna sent us a whole bunch of beef sticks.
Yes.
So we did a little taste test on the air.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right. Next up, little Dean Richards here on Bob Surratt Show doing his entertainment report. This one's coming to us from Fox Valley Mike.
Delicious nuttiness.
What was he talking about?
Talking about Jim Carrey's performance in Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah. I hear he's like full on Jim Carrey.
Well, you might as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be in this movie.
But we did have two horrible reviews of it just this past Sunday night, Monday morning from Steve and Eric.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right.
Next one. You're going to be seeing a lot of him today. Lou Manfredini.
Oh.
This one coming to us from Waukegan Jay.
Now I'll come to your house and put it in.
Talking to John Williams there.
will he steal baseball signs at all?
He may.
Okay.
He may. I wonder how John would feel about that. Come over to your house and steal some baseball signs
Steal some baseball signs for you.
All right. Another one here. This is John Williams caught here by Mike Novak Construction. Thanks, Mike.
You and Bertrand don't think I can pull this off?
Mike from Novak Construction. By the way, the Valentine's Day stuff, the lights and everything are up at the Novak Construction. They do such a lovely job decorating Novak Construction there so that everybody on the Kennedy can feel festive whenever there's a holiday coming up.
I love it.
So there's the lovely Valentine's Day stuff is up right now.
I'm guessing they'll do St. Patty's, too.
Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. St. Patty's is up right now.
St. Patty's is up
Because
right
we're past. Yeah, we're so past it's St. Patty's Day. So they got the rainbow with the
pot of gold.
Pot of gold at the end.
Wow.
It says Patty's, St. Patty, Happy Patty's Day up there. Yeah, that's right. Sorry. I got my calendar all messed up. But either way, every holiday, they decorate nicely. And I always get a little smile when we drive down the Kennedy and see the Novak Construction. So, and thank you for participating in the show. We appreciate it. Okay.
All right. Next up, coming to us from Kerry. This is from a fill-in spot that Buzz Killman did for Dave Plyer.
Buzz was here?
Yeah, Buzz Killman.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Let's take a listen to this. Thanks, Kerry.
Those sweet, juicy berries.
I used to see Buzz every morning when we preceded Brandmeier, when Brandmeier was on here on GN. I used to see Buzz every morning. Good guy.
Amazing name.
Buzz Killman's the best, man.
It's a great name.
He's a very cool dude, too. Yeah. Okay.
All right. I got a triple threat of Manfredini here.
Oh, man. Where is Esmeralda? I hope she's up.
More Manfredini than your body has room for.
All right.
All right.
Doopy doot doot doopy doot doot. Or whatever that.
Ta-ta-tu-ta-ti.
Okay.
All right. This is coming to us from Lake Geneva, Dan.
You made my wife all happy now.
Well, you'll make her happy when you clear that drain.
Wow.
That's...
Clear the drain.
That's pretty good if that's a euphemism for something. Okay.
All right.
More Lou?
Yeah, more Lou.
All right.
More Lou. This one's from Joyce.
A lot of other things I could be looking at online, and that's what I choose to look at.
You might want to clear your browser history, Lou.
Browser.
All right.
All right. And then this one's from Brian.
Is it 2 inches? Is it 6 inches? What is it?
Okay.
Next one here. This is coming to us from Deanna.
Oh, okay.
Lovely Deanna. And it's a little bit of both of us here.
Uh-oh.
You and I. Let's take a listen. You don't want to have dried out meat.
Yeah, that's the worst, isn't it? When your meat's all dried out.
Yeah, it's all dried out. Okay. Wilting.
We had to know, right?
Oh, we knew.
We had to know.
We were all in on it.
Yeah. We want one more here, but then we'll take a little break.
Yep. Right. One more here. This is actually one I just happened to catch when I was.
This is you.
Yeah.
From you.
Yeah.
There's a back end on it. What? Was that me? There's a back end on it. What?
There's a back end on it.
What was that? Oh, it was when we were doing the spicy meat sticks.
Yeah, spicy meat stick.
Because it did. I mean, at first, it's like, oh, that's fine. And by the way, that Hot Ones game show is hilarious. The Hot Ones game show, I watched it. It's hilarious. So, all right. Nick DiGiulio show continues. We have our regular Friday features. We will keep going with Straight Out of Context. We got Nick D Show Spies. And get your funky pants on and get your requests in for Fly Jams Friday. 312-981-7200. Take some requests now at 312-981-7200. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as
F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context, 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 context.
That's right. We're back. Nick DiGiulio show continues on 720 WGN. We're here till 4 o'clock, and then we head over to Bradley Place to the TV side here on Channel 9 WGN, and we will hear their morning news. And then Bob Surratt comes in at 5 for your morning drive here on a Friday morning. It's Friday. That means we have our regular features here. Straight out of context. Again, when you listen to this radio station 24/7, whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and it makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We play them back every Friday. All right, what's next time?
All right, surprising no one, it's another Lou coming to us from Brian. Take a listen.
Anna, you may have to get down on your hands and knees in the back seat and be like, oh, there it is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Whose show was he on?
Yeah, that was on Anna's show.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, he's made quite the rounds this past week.
Okay,
been all over the place. Yeah,
good old Lou. All right.
Next one is our good pal Justin Kaufman, caught by Carrie.
You can be dirty, but you can't be gross.
What was that?
He was talking about he was listing things like you have to give up one of these things, and I think this one was like brushing your teeth, wearing deodorant, or wearing socks with sandals. And he said, oh, wearing socks with sandals. You can be dirty, but you can't be gross. Yeah.
All right,
next, a little bit of a celebrity one here. It's the esteemed Chicago Tribune food critic Phil Vettel.
Vettel,
pardon me.
Yes.
And he was on the John Williams show here, got caught, and this one's coming to us from Fox Valley Mike.
There's a lot of pork involved, as you might imagine.
That's funny. What was the conversation about?
They were just talking about some good places to go get, really nice pork.
Yeah, ribs and stuff?
I think it was a little bit more on the higher end, but still like something anybody could go to.
All right, cool.
And if Phil Vettel says it's good, then it has to be good.
That's correct. All right.
And then finally, this one's coming to us from Marie, and this is John Williams. This might be the best thing he's ever said on air.
Okay.
I'll just take off the nylons I'm currently wearing.
Wow. All right. What's going on there?
So, I think him and Lou were talking about nylon covering of something.
Oh, okay.
He said, well, hold on, let me take off my nylons.
I see. Boy, Lou brings out the best in people, doesn't he?
Really? He really does.
And he dominated this week.
He did. He had a great week.
Yeah.
John was the big winner last week, I would say.
Yeah.
And then Lou.
Yeah, Lou coming on strong this week. There you go. All right. Well, again, listen 24/7. Keep those ears peeled and listen to this radio station. And whenever anybody says something that you think is a little bit out of contexty, jot it down. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right. Let's try this one.
What do you do? No one else can dance like you. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody
spies.
Like hey.
Someone to keep plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody
spies. Spies, spies, spies.
Like us.
That's it. That's it right there. Nick D. Show Spies. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time mentions me, we want to know about it. You become a spy. You jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And then we play them back on Friday. All right, what do we got, Tom?
All right, one spy this week, and this is coming to us courtesy of a couple people, Diana Naperville and also Doc caught this one. Steve and Johnny filled in this past weekend for Matt Bubala.
Oh, okay.
So they did the overnight Friday into Saturday, and, as naturally happens, you managed to come up, so here we go.
Also, this was the year for We Are the World. And just say that in front of Nick DiGilio and watch him go, You know, if you don't follow Nick on Facebook, you must, because it will give you a perspective on look up curmudgeon. Yesterday, he started ranting about milk, M-E-L-K. It's not milk. It's milk. And I laugh so hard at these little things that set him off.
What was the, was it a TV show or a movie or something that he hated and we watched and we thought, well, that's actually kind of cool. Oh, it was within the past week.
Yes. Golly.
And we love Nick, but every now and then we got to say, Nick, you're wrong.
But, talk about 35 years. He's been here with us just about all of that time because he was just a teenager when we started, like Roy Leonard, having him on our radio show. And even then, he came in and was a curmudgeon when he was 20. It was just the other day I said, what does he know? And then I found out that I frequently will read something Nick says and then go, what does he know, and move on.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
The movie was Music and Lyrics.
Oh. Oh, they liked that? Music, did you see that movie?
Yeah.
Oh. First of all, who is the female lead in that? It's Drew Barrymore, right?
Hugh Grant and Drew Barrymore.
Okay, what's the age difference there? That was my first hurdle to get over, because Hugh Grant's got to be 60, right? He's got to be 60. And she's, 40?
Yeah. Is he really 60?
He's got to be.
Look. 59.
Well, okay, see what I'm saying? So he's almost 60. How old is she? Early 40s at the most, right? At the most, right? Drew Barrymore?
Yeah, she's 44.
Okay, so the age difference to me bothered me. And then the movie was terrible. The movie was terrible. Music and Lyrics. Come on now. But yeah, I am a curmudgeon. I'd be the first to admit that. And by the way, it is pronounced milk. And this is an expert. If there's anything that I know about, really a lot about, it is milk. Considering how much of it I consume. All right. I love Steve and Johnny. I do. Hey, by the way, can I get some, do I have weather? We can just do a weather report. We'll just do one. It's going to be cold. I know that much. It's going to be cold today, and then we warm up over the weekend. A little rain, snow, I believe, coming down on Saturday. Or at least that's what we were told. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to get your requests in, because we're going to get funky here. Because Fly Jams Friday is about to commence. DJ Luscious Hushus has been seen gallivanting in the hallways. That's a great word, gallivanting. Wonder what's the origin of that, of gallivanting? We should look that up. So, all right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to get your requests in now, should we play the little intro first, or intro for the fly jams?
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam, fly jam, fly jams Friday.
Oh yeah, this is Fly Jam Friday on
on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
There it is. All right, it's officially Fly Jams Friday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Giglio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here, and yeah, and it's Fly Jams Friday. Yeah, man, Fly Jams Friday. Nick Giglio here. Luscious Huscious is your DJ. Was that a request?
Yeah, that was.
Who wanted to hear that?
Coming to us from our pal Mike in Louisville.
Mike in Louisville. All right. All right, Luscious Huscious is here, getting ready to go. You got some requests in?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so let's do it. Let's get funky. Let's get fly. It's Fly Jams Friday. What's next?
All right, next up, coming to us from our good pal Dino, it's a little Trouble Funk. This one's called Pump Me Up.
I think this is the first time we've ever played this. This might be a first for Fly Jam Friday.
A Fly Jam's first?
A Fly Jam's first, yeah. Who is this again?
Trouble Funk.
Trouble Funk is the name of the group? So Dino requested this?
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a Fly Jam first. So there it is. Fly Jam Friday continues, 312-981-7200. Distracted because John Lovitz is trying to be funny on TV right now. All right.
All right, next up, coming to us from Lisa. This one's called Kiss and Say Goodbye.
Oh, great song.
By the Manhattans.
Great song.
I had to meet you here today. There's just so many things to say. Please don't stop me till I'm through. This is something I hate to do. We've been meeting here so long. I guess what we done, oh's wrong. Please, darling, don't you cry. Let's just kiss and say goodbye. Many months have passed.
That's such a great song. Great song. Hey, by the way, you know who rules? Because, you know, I have the TV on here on the, you know, I have some video screens in here. And one of them that's on the console here next to the board. Friends is on right now. One of the guests on Friends, Chris Parnell. Chris Parnell rules. I don't think people appreciate just how funny Chris Parnell is.
He's an amazing bit player.
He's fantastic. And you know, he's the only cast member of SNL to have been brought back. He was fired and then brought back. And the reason why? Will Ferrell went to bat for him. Will Ferrell says, "You don't bring Parnell back, I'm leaving." And they were like, "Well, we don't want to lose Will Ferrell." And so they brought Chris Parnell back. And he's great. I mean, he's fantastic. He's underrated. He's a really underrated cast member on SNL. Always good. Always good. Always funny. And he's hilarious in Anchorman. So, all right. What do we got next as far as funky stuff?
All right. Next cut coming to us. I want to see if you know this tidbit. It's the Average White Band.
Mm-hmm.
The song is Cut the Cake. Do you know where the Average White Band is from?
Average White Band.
Average White Band.
Are they from Boston?
No. Even whiter.
Even whiter?
Yeah. Even whiter than Boston.
No, that's not possible.
Yes, it is. The least likely place for funk to find a home. Scotland.
Oh, they're Scottish?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Get it!
There's no way those guys are Scottish.
100%.
No way. Seriously?
Yeah. You take one look at the lead singer and the bass player. They're like got like bright red hair.
Okay. I had no idea. I just thought they were American.
Nah, like Alan Gorey, Ani McIntyre.
Oh man. Okay.
Cliff Lyons. Yeah, they're from Dundee.
And where is Dundee?
So that's, if I'm not mistaken, that is on the kind of eastern coast of
okay.
Scotland, Dundee.
Where did you live when you were in Scotland?
So I lived in a place called the Borders, which is, broadly speaking, just the large swath of area before you hit the border of England.
Oh, okay.
So I would say, like, northwest by about an hour of Edinburgh, Scotland, which
okay.
is the capital.
Right.
So I was much farther south where the accents are at least understandable. You start getting to these guys, you kind of don't know.
You have no idea what they're saying.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's weird because it's strange because I have a good ear for understanding when people have thick or weird accents. Because I don't know what it is. For instance, I understand everything Brad Pitt says in Snatch. I had no difficulty understanding anything that he said in Snatch. And you know those Ken Loach movies that are subtitled? I don't need them. I don't need them. Did you see?
You just have the ear for it, you know.
Did you see the Gary Oldman's directorial debut? Did you see a movie called Nil by Mouth?
Yeah.
People were like, "I don't understand anything anybody is saying in this movie. I don't know what it is. I can understand weird accents and stuff." So. I'm just a weirdo. Okay, what's next for funkiness?
All right, so just so you know, that Average White Band cut came to us from the 847.
Oh.
This next one's coming to us from Chris. It's I Want to Be Closer by Switch.
Somebody better cut a check to Billy Paul. Seriously. Mrs. Jones. Somebody cut a check to Billy Paul. What year is this? Does it say?
Let's see. 1977.
Oh, no.
Motown.
No. You cut a check to Billy Paul. That's post Mrs. Jones. It's the same damn... It's the same thing.
Hey, man. You can blame Jermaine Jackson for that one. Composer and lyricist on that, and producer.
Jermaine Jackson as in Jermaine Jackson?
Yes.
Like Michael Jackson's brother?
Yes. 1977 Motown Records.
Okay, well, he ripped off Billy Paul. That's all I'm saying. Greatest song of the 70s, he ripped it off. Best fly jam of all time, and he ripped it off. I can understand if you're going to steal, you steal from the best. Sorry, I got a little angry about that. Because I thought for a second, wait a minute, this is Billy Paul. And it's not. Okay, we got one more here?
Yeah, one more quick one. It's the Brothers Johnson.
Oh.
Get the funk out of my face.
Yeah, man. Brothers Johnson, man. Fly. Very, 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 very fly.
All right.
All right. It's another edition of Fly Jams Friday. Luscious Hushers will be back on Friday, next Friday, and we'll have all of our regular features, too, on next Friday. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tom, welcome back. I'm glad you're back, and feel better, because I know you're still a little under the weather. So feel better. All right. Let's do this, and we've got the WGN... early morning news from Bradley Place coming up.